Some of what you are about to hear might be deemed offensive by some people. If you are insulted by people arguing about the New England Patriots and pretty much anything else, or by subjects like soap with a slot, gutter cleaners, people with big heads, Bill Polian, Egypt, wedge salads, and drilling for oil, you probably shouldn't listen to PFW in Progress. But if you do listen and hear something questionable, please do not be offended. We're just trying to entertain. In other words, some of the content of PFW in Progress may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
The following takes place between 12 p.m. and 2 p.m.
This is PFW in Progress.
I got a judge that's just aching to throw me in jail. I got no money, a dress code problem, not to mention your biological clock. Is there any more we could pile on to the top of the outcome of this case? Is it possible?
PFW in Progress with Fred Kirsch.
All right, knock it off. You know, you ragging on me is not going to give me any great spontaneous knowledge.
Paul Perillo.
You just keep on asking about Chinese food. Can't you tell they don't have Chinese restaurants around here? Gotta let everybody know you're a tourist.
And Andy. And Andy?
Everything that guy just says is bullshit. Thank you.
Andy Hart.
Let me see. This is a tough decision you're giving me here. Get my ass kicked to collect $200. What do you think? I could use a good ass kick, and I'll be very honest with you.
Eric Scalavino. For now, anyway.
You stick out like a sore thumb around here.
Me? What about you?
I fit in better than you. At least I'm wearing cowboy boots.
Oh, yeah, you blend.
PFW in Progress, part of the Patriots Football Network.
Imagine you're a deer. You're prancing along. You get thirsty. You spot a little brook. You put your little deer lips down to the cool, clear water.
Bam! A bullet rips off part of your head. Your brains are laying on the ground in little bloody pieces. Now I ask you, would you give a what kind of pants the son of a who shot you was wearing?
This is a very sensitive subject.
Are you done? We haven't even started. You're already turning into a trailer.
I didn't play anything.
That's true, you don't. You don't play any drop-ins.
From the moment I heard Brown say I had a clone, I knew that I'd be safe because I'd never be alone.
Special treat today, Tuesday, July 7th here at Gillette Stadium. After, I don't know how long we've waited for this, but people are clamoring for Brian Lowe and the Fantasy Lowdown.
Make sure you tell your friend
to go yourselves. Brian Lowe of Patriots Today fame, but more importantly of the Fantasy Lowdown fame, is here with me in studio as the rest of Team PFW has decided to take the rest of the summer off, I guess. No Fred. So right there, show goes down. Fred is the indispensable part of the show, Brian. I don't know if you've realized that.
Fred,
the guy who knows,
Fred, who?
The guy who knows the least right. Is the most indispensable.
You
no question.
Your ass off.
So no Fred, no Andy Hart, no Eric Scalavino. Well, we could do without Eric, but
yeah.
We're going to get by here with a little bit of a tag team effort. We're going to have Brian Lowe, as I said, of Patriots Today for the first hour. And we're going to have Ding and Dong for the second half of the show. The two interns, Chris and Craig, will come down and they'll join me for the second hour. But PFW in Progress here on Patriots.com Radio, this is the perfect time to be shorthanded because I know that many people might be looking at it as training camp is right around the corner. But right now, for NFL players and coaches and employees, training camp is the last thing we're thinking of right now because this is our last moments of freedom.
Well, Paul, let me just say, first of all, the fans may have been clamoring for Brian Lowe. Brian Lowe is clamoring for a good lunch. So it's a perfect match to have me in the studio today. But I will say this. There is nothing like coming back from a very difficult five-day holiday weekend, Paul, and getting a phone call from you early on that first grueling day back to see if I'm available for radio. I mean, you know, five-day weekends are, you know, to get through a five-day weekend, it just takes a lot of, concentration and
I
emotion.
I wouldn't know. I didn't have a five-day weekend.
I'm thinking about trying to incorporate them into my schedule more often. But, beautiful weekend. And then I come in, I'm getting back to work, and I get a phone call from you to see if I can come in. And how could I pass that up? thanks for having me on today,
Paul.
Well,
just so you know, I did make the call yesterday but you weren't there.
Wasn't there. I mean, that's well, that was my
much
that was,
like yesterday, the rest of Gillette Stadium.
I tried right. five other people also. So
hey, Doc, how
Where was
your
was
vacation?
I five.
You were
awesome.
You were in Colorado, right? Mm.
Beautiful out there.
Yeah,
weather was nice. We were in a natural hot spring pool. I didn't see Bill from Vail, but it was still a good time.
All right. So basically, the moral of this story is everybody went somewhere except for, you know what time it is. It's poop on Paul time.
Poop. Oh, the kids.
Paul went nowhere, and the kids got sick. I didn't even get to go out for the 4th of July. So
Will and TJ, tough going.
That's why we're going to bounce back, I think, a little bit with the Will and TJ pool party. But that's for
Very
later
exciting.
In the month.
Which listener is funding the catering for that?
Oh, well, you know, I'm glad you brought that up because we should.
Taking nominations all week.
Before going any further, we should recognize our good buddy Mike in Puerto Rico, who is our lunch buyer today, and he stepped up big because not only he included Brian Lowe.
Thank you, Mike.
Of Fantasy Lowdown fame and, of course, Patriots Today.
That's right.
But he also included everybody's least favorite webmaster, Chris Pereira. And that was really nice. That was above and beyond. He recognized the fact that most of our staff was not here today, and he didn't want to get out on the cheap. He said,
he
let me
budget.
Step up. Let me get something for Chris. So that was really nice of him. And Chris wanted to send a separate shout-out to you, Mike, to thank you for a wonderful lunch, by the way, provided by CBS Scene.
Yeah. And Mike, you know, Mike probably had a budget that he had in mind to spend. And while you don't want to go over that budget, hey, no need to go too far under that budget. You target that money for PFW lunch, take all comers. And hey,
it's a good point. It's a good point, Brian. We're about the salary cap here.
Yeah.
And listen,
there's a minimum and there's a max.
There are penalties for going below the floor as well. So absolutely, we wanted to think of Mike there before we did anything wrong. But, as we get started in the show, Brian, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't jump right in and discuss what is probably the biggest NFL story of the entire offseason, mm-hmm. and that is the tragic shooting and death of Steve McNair.
Yeah, a death of a very recent, very accomplished player under any circumstances would be shocking, stunning, and certainly emotional for a lot of people. The circumstances surrounding this one add all different kinds of layers to it. But, you know, bottom line is he was such an accomplished athlete, really a pioneer. I mean, you hear all these players, former teammates, and other players speaking up in these last couple days about what a pioneer he was as far as being a highly drafted black quarterback coming from a small school, drafted 3rd overall. And you hear from other quarterbacks with similar backgrounds, and they're really they look to him as a guy who really paved the way. And I remember that playoff game in 2003 here, that bitter, frigid, cold game against Tennessee. That was a game where he really towards the end there, who was it? Was it Drew Bennett that dropped
pass,
the ball?
Yeah.
And that could have been, you know, that game could have gone the other way. And he was such a great player, a co-MVP 1 year. And what's unfortunate is that the circumstances surrounding his death may overshadow some of what he accomplished, and who knows what truth will come, or what will come out if the truth really comes out on what happened here. But certainly a sad day for a sad week around the NFL, marring what truly is a nice weekend. Or often NFL teams have this. This is the time to take off, and it was just shattered. And Jeff Fisher, you know, we hear from him. He's out in Kuwait on a USO tour and gets the news. And more locally, Floyd Reese, who's now the Patriots senior advisor, was, with the Titans or Oilers Titans organization for a long time, and knew McNair well.
Yeah, so, I mean, that kind of hit everybody, late in the day on July 4th. That kind of hit mm-hmm. everybody like a ton of bricks, and it was very surprising to see that come out. You know, you just don't expect a 36-year-old guy. Listen, I'm not going to ignore the fact of you touched on all the layers of the story, and I'm not going to ignore that fact. I mean, this was a former NFL Man of the Year, and we like to propel these guys maybe onto pedestals that maybe they don't belong. You know, they're great football players, and I have no doubt that Steve McNair was a good person. Mm-hmm. He did a lot of wonderful things for charity. By all accounts, in the Nashville area, he was a beloved figure, one who was a fixture in that community, outside of the home and out in public, and he just opened a restaurant and whatnot. But the fact of the matter is, if he's home with his family and not out with an alleged girlfriend, he's alive today. Not probably alive. He is alive today. So at the same, I don't want to, cast aspersions on a guy who obviously just, and most tragically to me, leaves behind four sons. But at the same time, I don't want to ignore that and just talk about all the good things, too. I mean, he was doing something that he probably shouldn't. Now, did he deserve to lose his life over that? No. I mean, there's people that have had affairs, you know, probably going back since the dawn of time. But, you know, fact of the matter is we call this guy a special person, not just a special football player. And in reality, he was probably flawed just like the rest of us.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, different circumstances, but Michael Jackson. I mean, Michael Jackson passes away a couple weeks ago, and everything he accomplished, all that we know he accomplished in his career as a, you know, from the standpoint of the music, is always going to be marred, and rightfully so, yeah, by everything else, all the other bizarre situations. But with McNair, you know, you have all these stories about, you know, he was a car that was registered to both himself and this girl, and the DUI from a couple days earlier, and the wife saying she hadn't seen him in a couple days, and a lot of bizarre circumstances that, you know, like I said, I don't know if we'll ever know the truth, but, you know, it's tough. Clearly, you hear from a lot of his teammates and former coaches and all that who are really having a tough time with this, and they know him better than we do. Maybe they knew different sides of him, maybe they didn't, but they're looking at him as a teammate, as a father, as a football player, and remembering those times. So,
and that's how Floyd Reese certainly remembered him. I'll read his his statement real quick. And the Patriots put this out on July 4th in the afternoon. I am deeply saddened to learn of today's tragic news regarding the death of Steve McNair. He was a player I admired a great deal. He was a tremendous leader and an absolute warrior. He felt like it was his responsibility to lead by working hard every day, no matter what. I don't think there was a player who played with him or against him that didn't look up to him and respect him. My heartfelt condolences go out to his family, his friends, and the many teammates who loved and admired him. Again, those are the words of Floyd Reese shortly after learning of the of McNair's death. And I guess the authorities there have put the brakes on calling it a murder-suicide, but certainly all signs would seem to be pointed in that direction. I mean, multiple gunshot wounds for McNair, four, I believe, mm-hmm. And one to the head of the woman, the 20-year-old woman. So it would seem to indicate a murder-suicide.
Right, all they said definitively.
But and even the authorities aren't really pursuing any other angles. They're
right.
Not looking for any potential murderer
right.
In the Nashville area. So that's the way it looks like, and we'll take, obviously, any emails or phone calls if you guys want to talk about Steve McNair. In that situation, feel free. Webradio@patriots.com is the best way to reach us. Email is webradio@patriots.com. You can also give us a call at 508-543-7482. The emails are piling in already, Brian, but I wanted to get that McNair stuff out there at the beginning. I also, as you know, we have a spirited debate that has started right here on these airwaves by one of our emailers who sparked a great debate about, would you rather go 19-0 and then have Tom Brady retire, or not go 19-0, not win the championship, but be guaranteed that Brady plays the next 10 years? And that has sort of taken on a life of its own, overwhelmingly in favor of the Andy Hart side, and I think your side.
I hate to call it the Andy Hart side. I hate giving him credibility. Yeah.
We put it up on the website,
right?
And it was like 70-30.
I saw that, and I've had some discussions.
It was a blowout in favor of keeping Brady for 10 years.
So there's the Paul Perillo side, and there's the Andy Hart side.
No, there's really the Fred Kirsch, Eric Scalavino side, and the Andy Hart side. I know that you're going to be shocked by
Don't tell me you're waffling.
I am. Like I said, I know you're going to be shocked by this. When was the last time you ever saw me in a sports argument be wishy-washy?
Paul, you know your stuff, and you're definitive with your arguments.
I am on the 19-0 side, but slightly.
Was it the other side? Did you feel strongly about 19-0 and then start to hear arguments and think, well, okay, you've been on the
I can understand it both ways. To me, it's kind of like you make a deal with the devil.
Right.
I mean, I'll take the 19-0 and all the fame and power that goes with that and the immortality, but I'm going to lose my quarterback, and chances are I'm going to have a hard time getting back to the Super Bowl without Brady. I mean, I can recognize the fact that it's going to be a lot harder to get back to the Super Bowl. However, I think a lot of people that are on the Brady 10-year side are looking at it as one title as opposed to multiple titles. That's not the argument. The argument is 10 years of Brady
right.
or 19.
And I feel that 10 years of Brady gives you a better chance to win more titles than they would have under any other quarterback. Sure, maybe they'd win a title under Matt Castle. Maybe they'd luck out and draft a new Tom Brady. But I feel as though maybe I'm underrating the 19-0. Don't get me wrong.
No,
don't get me
I don't
wrong.
Think you
how,
are.
Don't
I
get me wrong. 19-0 would be special. Special for everybody involved, and would definitively allow the Patriots of, in this case, 2007, go down as the greatest football team in NFL history. But to me, going 11-5 during the season and winning the Super Bowl versus going 19-0 and winning the Super Bowl, you got the Super Bowl. How you get there, to me, is less important. And I think that if they ended the 2007 season as it did and then still had Tom Brady for 10 more years, that they'd be putting themselves in much better position to win a few more Super Bowls, have the Brady-Belichick era go down as potentially the greatest era in NFL history, and Tom Brady go down as the greatest quarterback in NFL history in virtually every category. Yeah. And I'm also, because the Patriots won three Super Bowls earlier in the decade, and ultimately the teams that I'm a fan of, I want them to win, but I think this would have been... I like the thrill of the chase. Going, you know, the ride with Brady would be far more exciting, enticing, and hopefully productive than it would be without him, is the way I feel. So I would go with, give me Brady for 10 more years, let 2007 finish as it did, and I'll take my chances with Brady.
Yeah, well, basically, the reason that I would go on the 19-0 side, and again, I'm specifically saying that very rare for me. I'm kind of in the middle on this.
It's okay, Paul.
I'm leaning toward the 19-0 side, and this is why. I'm just going to use everything that you just said. If they win multiple titles, additional titles, then the Brady-Belichick partnership and the era go down as the greatest of all time. Well, if they went 19-0, they would be the greatest. If in 2007 they went 19-0 and won that title, 4 in 10 years, whatever Brady's career was at the time, 4 in 8 years, and then Brady retired, that is the greatest era of football, bar none. 4 titles in 6 years, including a perfect season, and then Brady trots off into the sunset. There is no argument. That is the greatest era of all time, right there. And I'm guaranteed to have it. Your scenario is, if things go right, mm-hmm. and they win another couple, then I could have it again. So I'm basically passing up the possibility of it for the guarantee.
Well, there's the guarantee of the 19-0 guarantee of the title. I also like the notion that, I mean, NFL is unpredictable. You don't know what would happen, and they would be. That would be the greatest decade. I mean, no team would be able to have that. But I think you could get several more. 19-0. It means something to me. I don't think it means as much to me as it does for a lot of.
If it was just a 1-19-0. Then it wouldn't mean as much to me.
But 19-0 on an island.
It'd
be four. But
it'd
I
be
think
four titles plus one of them being the best ever. So this, to me, there could be no argument of who the best team is of all time. And to me, that span of 01 to 007, to me, is the greatest ever. Look, I mean, I understand that you have a very good chance to continue to win in the future with Brady. I'm just passing that up for the guarantee of winning. You know, and again, it's a fictitious,
right.
hypothetical situation.
But it's a great one. It's an interesting one.
We've had a lot of fun with
and
this.
And I like the idea.
And it won't go away, by the way.
And I like that. Well, if we keep bringing it up, Paul, for sure.
Well, I mean, the reason we're keeping bringing it up is some of the emails
July,
that we've already gotten.
And it's July.
Obviously.
No, but
July.
But I also love the idea of being a fan of the New England Patriots, having Tom Brady for 10 more years, watching him potentially become definitively the greatest quarterback of all time, both in terms of stats, in terms of championships, longevity, whatever it may be, seeing him for 10 more years as opposed to his career ending after 8 seasons, and as good as it might be, you'd have the enticement of this next 10-year period where you'd have Tom Brady from still at his peak into maybe the twilight and watch him become potentially the greatest quarterback ever definitively. I think that, to me, and giving you the best opportunity over the next 10 years to win more titles as opposed to whoever else would be quarterback, that to me is what I'd lean toward.
Right.
And yeah, I mean,
on this topic,
Paul, but the
I
fact
do
that
wanna...
you, the fact that you can't come to a decision, to me validates what a great argument
well,
it is.
Well, I just think, I mean, my decision is the 19-0, but I don't think, usually when I'm in a sports argument, I feel like I am right
yeah.
and the other guy's wrong. I mean, that's just the way, I mean, I'm,
that's why
I get like
you,
that. I am usually no gray area.
Mm-hmm. You're naked,
and you've known me as long as anybody on this show has known me, and you can never really recall a time where Paul was wishy-washy.
I reacted
to that
as you expected
argument.
Me to react. What? You, Paul?
So for me to really look at the other side and say, I get that. I can see that. That to me is rare. That's why I think this is a good argument. But
yeah.
I do want to read this one email here, and it comes in from Harry. And it's a little long, so bear with me. I'm going to read the whole thing.
Should I finish my CBSN sandwich?
Yeah, go ahead.
No, it's
okay. It's the subject line is debate, question mark, goodbye, Tom. And he wrote this after last Thursday's show. Unequivocal. I watched the 2001 Patriots win the Super Bowl in Afghanistan in the dark hours of the morning in a tent with no heat. At the conclusion of that game, I went outside, wrapped myself in a sleeping bag, plopped down in a chair, and watched the sunrise. At that moment, I told myself that the Patriots could be bad for the next 5 years, and I would not care. Why was I so fulfilled? I became a fan when I got season tickets in 1989. Everyone thinks Foxborough Stadium snow was beautiful in 2001. In 1989, when it was snowing and your team is down by 20 points in the fourth quarter, the game clock slows down and every second hurts. Prior to the 2001 season, I argued with my buddy, a Dallas fan, who would have the worst season. I was sure the Patriots were in for more misery. Then we lost our only two star players, Terry Glenn and Drew Bledsoe. Why did I sit so content that morning in Afghanistan? Not because the Patriots had won the Super Bowl, because they had put together a series of events in the 2001 season that was beyond belief. It was the totality of it all that made the win great. I watched the 07 Patriots lose the Super Bowl standing in front of my TV. The rest of the world was irrelevant at that point as I stared at the impossibility playing out before me. When I went to work that week, nobody talked to me. They saw the look, knew the love I had for that team, and did not attempt to console me. I did not watch TV, read a newspaper, or log on to the internet. I fear that I would encounter news about that event. In writing this now, I just laughed at myself at how pathetic that was, but my eyes also welled up just a little bit. Why was I so distraught? That this was it. Do you understand? This was it. We had the greatest offense of all time, breaking the record for most points scored. We had completed the perfect season. We had overcome Spygate, and we were getting ready to put the final piece of the puzzle into a complete masterpiece. Teams have done great things in the past. The 72 Dolphins, the 49ers of the 80s, the 2000 Rams, greatest show on turf, were set to surpass all these things in a single moment. It was the totality of the event. We were set to do something unequivocal. The big argument is, would I take that win if Tom Brady was going to walk out the door, never to return? In a heartbeat. I would let Tom drive off into the sunset. He could take Randy, Wes, and Coach Belichick with him. They can all move down to Florida and play for Miami. I'm not necessarily doing that.
Oh, do they play
this
for
was
another
retiring.
Team? Retiring.
Playing for another
yeah.
team, I'm not necessarily sure.
Different
I can
argument.
Do that, especially Miami. I wish them good luck and will never forget what they gave me. We don't celebrate the guy who climbed a mountain. We celebrate the guy who climbed Mount Everest. We were not poised to accomplish a great thing. We were poised to accomplish the greatest thing. A set of achievements in their entirety that will never come again. I want that win. There was one piece of the perfect puzzle missing, and it was the most important part. So there is really
touching
a good debate because,
it is
you know,
a good
Brian,
debate.
You just talked eloquently for 5 minutes about the other side of it and the thrill of the chase and knowing that you're going to be in it. And Andy did the same thing. That was Andy's big point of contention was that I know every year with Brady I'm going to be in the running, and that to me is worth it.
And maybe in the running for a 19-0. And granted, I fully understand what you said, Paul, that you have that guarantee of that 19-0 in this argument. But I think that you have a chance over these 10 years, maybe even 2009, to pursue that 19-0 again. And I know you got the guarantee. You have it in the books. It's done. It's all said and done. But I don't think there's a quarterback out there that I'd rather have over a 10-year period, regardless of what happened in the previous 10 years, to enjoy that thrill of the chase for getting more of them, maybe getting a 19-0 again, and taking my chances that way. And I think, and part of it too, you know, I grew up in Boston. I've been a fan of all the Boston teams, and my perspective.
You're a fanboy, you can say it.
I'm a fan.
Felger
well,
would make fun of
well,
you.
Well, Felger and has. No, but my perspective as a Boston sports fan has changed over this decade because of how productive and how many championships there have been in baseball, basketball, and football. I now, bottom
just,
line.
That's what we expect. But we can't imagine going back. I can't.
I can't either.
I'm so spoiled, I can't imagine going back.
But what I'm saying here is the bottom line is that I like to have my teams win. That's what it's all about. That's the bottom line. but I like it to be interesting. I want to have teams that are interesting, that are fun to follow, not because, oh, he's a nice guy and this and that, that are interesting to follow, whether it be the pursuit of championships, the ups and downs of a season. And I understand that my teams aren't going to win it all every right. year. You like to have them win as much as they can, but even when they're not winning, I like to be...
It's amazing.
I like to enjoy the drama that goes on. We were just talking off the air about Rasheed Wallace, and I'm a Celtics fan. And part of the reason why I like that, even though I think he's a head case and not a guy who I'd really want to be rooting for, is that I think he makes the team that I follow far more interesting to follow. If I have Tom Brady for 19 years of a career as opposed to just 8 or 9 under this, I'd rather have him for as long as we can have him because it's interesting to follow the team that Tom Brady is leading, both in terms of pursuit of championships, pursuit of individual accolades, and the way he makes a team better and leads a team. And
well, was it not interesting last year?
It was extremely interesting last year.
Tom Brady wasn't there.
I know that. But
so why can't it be interesting any year that Tom Brady's not there?
I didn't say it can't be interesting with or without any specific player, but I think it's more interesting over a 10-year stretch with Tom Brady than without.
Yeah, and that's the same argument, and this is why I'm in the middle. It's the same argument I make on the other side. I'm guaranteed that it's going to be interesting
right.
if Brady is here. I'm not guaranteed if he's not.
No, and likewise, so whenever Tom Brady leaves the Patriots or retires, it will be interesting to see the Patriots find the next quarterback. Who goes with it? But I want to have Tom Brady as a guy to follow
right.
for as long as I can.
Just to show you how much we're spoiled, though, with the Celtics thing, and with the Boston sports thing.
Yeah.
This past year, I mean, the Celtics just won the title last year.
Yep.
And then this past playoffs, you know, that I sat down to watch and I knew that Garnett wasn't playing. I really didn't even care. I was like, well, what's the sense? Why get wrapped up in these games when I know they can't win the title? And then, you know, shame on me if I didn't actually sit down and watch. No, I did. I watched every game. But look at some of the games that I would have missed. They played some great games. That didn't take away anything from that Chicago series. The fact that I knew in my heart of hearts that even if they somehow find a way to win this series with all these overtime games, they can't win
They're
it
probably
all.
Probably not getting there. Yeah.
You know, and I knew when I was watching that both of those series that they couldn't win it all. But that didn't take away from two very, very entertaining right. seven-game series that, under normal circumstances, would have been a great playoffs, and everybody would be very excited to look for the next year to see if they get farther. Now, with Garnett coming back, I think most people in Boston know they're going to get farther next year.
Well, yeah, and not that we're...
And your cancer in the clubhouse coming in to ruin things.
And I think he is. I think he is just that, Paul. And I
don't
that,
even
don't
care.
Have to get
you know that. I don't even
Celtics.
Care about the cancer part. I don't think he's that good a player anymore.
Well,
three or 4 years ago, I would have jumped all over right. this move, regardless of the technicals. To me, people keep comparing it to Randy Moss. Randy Moss was the best wide receiver in football.
Yeah.
So the negative of him being disruptive was offset by his talent.
Yeah.
The negative of Rasheed Wallace being disruptive, to me, is not going to get outweighed by his talent anymore because he's not that player anymore. He stands out behind the three-point line and shoots three-pointers.
And the way he's disruptive affects the team. I mean, he gets ejected from games. He gets penalized for these these technicals, and that affects the team. So in that sense, it's a major risk to have Rasheed Wallace on your team. And you're right, that doesn't outweigh, or it does outweigh the fact that his talents aren't what they used to be.
Got a few more emails here
yes.
too, Todd. My
as long
buddy,
as are they as long as Harry's?
No, that was a particularly long one.
Okay,
Todd in Nova Scotia says, "Here's my 2 cents on the Brady for 10 more years or 19-0. If it weren't for Spygate, I would have taken Brady for 10 more years, but I think you guys underestimate the beating Patriots fans took after Spygate. The 19-0 would have been the ultimate screw you to every other fans that say, yeah, but you cheated." So I'm not as much into that
honestly, I mean,
because I still think if you're going to be a guy that thinks that Spygate affected championships, don't you still think that Spygate helped them win in 2007? If you're one of those guys?
Yeah. Well, I wasn't even taking
Does anybody honestly, anybody that honestly thinks that Spygate affected wins and losses, does anybody honestly think that it didn't affect wins and losses in 07? They okay. taped everything from 2000 to 2006.
Right.
What did they just lose all that knowledge that they gained?
Yeah.
You know, so if you're one of those haters that thinks that they weren't very good and they just cheated their way to victory, you still think that in 2007.
Right, no question. And I didn't even think about that, not to minimize, I mean, it was a major development over the course of that year. I didn't even think about it as I was making my argument. Sure, it would have added something to a lot of fans' minds and for a lot of people, but not as big of a factor, in my opinion.
All right. Howard is one of our long-time
yeah.
emailers. He's the greatest. I believe he was an original.
Oh, yeah?
Original cast member. He says, after listening to the debate and hearing all sides, I fall on the side of the 19-0 season because, like Paul has stated, it's a guarantee. Having Brady for 10 years guarantees you nothing other than the chance to win more championships, whereas the 19-0 is a guaranteed championship and the greatest season of all time in NFL history and cements Brady and Belichick as the best quarterback head coach duo ever. Just my two cents. Thanks for keeping the dreaded offseason interesting.
How is it that it was 70-30 on the web, but it sounds like 70-30 in the other direction with emailers?
Yeah, there's no question on this show.
Yeah.
The edge is with 19-0, and yeah. It's not probably as big as 70-30, but on the web, yeah. It was a no contest.
I saw that.
Now,
I
also think that people that didn't know of our debate on the radio are taking it as it's 19-0 or Brady in multiple championships.
Right.
Because that's the way it's being perceived, right. And in our to blame us here, I don't think that it was written mm-hmm. as properly as it might have been.
But just to clarify, it's Brady.
Not to throw one of the members who is not here today who actually did the writing under the bus, but Eric didn't do a great job, I think, of really explaining. He would roll his eyes right now and
no,
get really mad.
No, stop telling lies. You are an habitual liar.
Oh, he would yeah. get so mad if he heard me say that. But
I'm sure he's listening, right?
Knowing that he doesn't really give this place a thought anytime that he's not actually in this place.
But that's
I'm fairly safe in talking behind his back.
But why should he give
it? I mean, he's on vacation. Olympics.
Oh, I think about things. No, he can't defend. Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh. We're always in your thoughts and in your heart. Huh?
Thinking about getting my party ready for everybody.
There you go.
That's stuff. That's,
I listened to Thursday's podcast yesterday.
See?
Well, that's the beauty of internet radio and podcasts.
Sam in Chicago.
And internet TV shows.
Also says that he has to, in the interest of fairness, I like to read them all,
yeah.
Brian.
Yeah.
Hey, Paul, I have to side with your co-anchor today.
Oh.
To wake up Sunday morning in the fall for the next 10 years and see where Brady could help the Patriots go would be and will be extremely exciting. But I'm being selfish. That would be for me. 19-0 would be the best, I feel, for the Patriots. To hear the announcers every game talk about the undefeated Patriots, that would be the greatest. And after hearing that email you just read, okay, well done. He has a point. Let's get up and read some great Boston headlines and look forward to Indy for the next 10 years.
Indy, the rivalry with Indy for the next 10 years?
Sam in Chicago. Yeah, maybe that's what he's talking about.
Brady Manning, 10 more years? Sure.
Well, I think that's what makes it really fun is when you have those kind of rivalries.
Absolutely.
Changing subjects just a little bit. And the debate, obviously, that's been open for the better part of 3 weeks now. So anybody that wants to weigh in on that debate, feel free. And we'll certainly do our best to get to those. Again, webradio@patriots.com. But I did want to talk about Peter King. It's Peter King.
Oh, the guy from Boston?
Yes, Boston's Peter King.
That guy from Boston, yes.
Well, he says he is on vacation right now, and his Monday morning quarterback is being handled by players, different players.
Yep.
And I did want to point out that this week on Monday, Matt Burke, former Harvard guy, center for the Minnesota Vikings, has handled the responsibilities. And I don't know what happened to the email here, but someone deleted an email from William Berry, my favorite emailer, by the way. It's
would
okay. I can paraphrase.
If it was your least favorite emailer, would you
say? He was sort of ripping Matt Burke for some of the things that he said and kind of laughing about the fact that there's no way a Patriot would do this because, you know, they would be – can you imagine what it would be like if they missed a block? Okay, the doctor does have it for me. Says bald guys and Fred and Andy. I don't know how Fred avoids the bald guys, by the way. Andy's the only one with a full head of hair. Can you imagine a Patriot, Colt, or Steeler doing that? No big deal, but can you imagine the ribbing he'd get from coaches and teammates if not prepared? Even things that might happen anyway. Say he gets steamrolled by a defensive lineman because the guard screwed up. Everyone's first reaction would be, if you weren't busy starting a writing career. Well, lo and behold, the very next day, who is taking over the Tuesday morning quarterback duties? But our own left tackle, Matt Light.
Who just a few weeks ago was involved in the NFL broadcasting boot camp.
And he writes about that. He writes about a lot of the NFL player initiatives and the business school stuff. That
he
has done that a lot at Harvard and Penn and Northwestern.
He's also
Paul. Whatnot.
He is the new player rep for the Patriots now. Is that correct?
I think he is involved in that.
I think he's always been involved. Mike Vrabel was.
And Izzo was. And
Izzo
I think
was
he was
well,
one of
right.
the other guys,
I think he was
too.
Being groomed maybe to be, but I'm not sure if he officially is or not. So, not that matters, but he's talking quite a bit about
labor
and Demaris Smith.
He talks about the boot camp and things like that. And he talks about the Patriots themselves. And one thing that we all agreed on last week, Brian, when did you see, I don't know, during your five-day weekend, if you were around when they actually announced the first 7 days of training camp, double sessions every
yes,
day?
Yes, I did see the
okay,
schedule.
Well, we had sort of surmised from that Bill wanted that out there for the players to see, hey, no messing around. We're going to get to work. We don't think they're probably going to have seven straight days of double sessions, but that's what they're announcing for the for the start. And it's really going to open up the players' eyes and say, hey, we got to be ready to go. Not gonna
that's
be
interesting.
Not going to be any screwing around. Maybe a little message there.
Could be.
Basically
could be.
Was our
put
point.
It past them, yeah.
But one
it
of
is
the
what it is.
One of the 10 things that that Matt Light thinks he thinks is
funny to
where is that?
I think the training camp should be illegal. Number six.
Are
is that what
me?
You're talking about?
No, that wasn't the one I was talking
about.
Well,
he does say, I think training camp should be illegal.
Let me see if I could find that. He talked about, here we go. He's, I think, as always, I'm excited for the start of the 09 season. With all the Patriots moves in the offseason and players and coaches, we'll definitely have a new look and way of doing things, but I'm confident that we have what it takes to be a good football team. Fortunately, from what I've heard, we will have plenty of full-speed reps in training camp to get ready.
Maybe getting
and
that word out.
He follows that up with number six. I think that training camp should be illegal.
maybe what you just said about Belichick having a plan, maybe it was specifically because he knew Matt Light would have a national audience.
So that's, I think that's kind of funny.
That's a great point. I did see the schedule, and like you, I would say that what's strange is Belichick has been a head coach now here for 9 years and in Cleveland, too. And as long as I've been around this team, the training camp schedule has been pretty much status quo year in, year out. Two a day, followed by one. Two, followed by one. And what's interesting to me is that it's such a drastic change this year. So you're probably right that there will be here and there they'll pick their spots as far as cancel a session, or it'll be more every other day. Maybe one of these double session practices will be not in pads, more walkthrough related. But very interesting the timing of Matt Light's. Leave it to Matt Light. He is one of the more witty guys on the team. And I would have to say, if you were to say, hey, pick an NFL, pick a Patriots player to do a 10 things I think, to make it interesting, witty, funny, thoughtful, I'd say Matt Light would be near the top of my list. And that think training camp should be illegal is right there for that. But training camp, boy, it is coming quick.
Well, moving around the dial here, Adam is in Charlotte, North Carolina. He has kind of a really off-topic thing, but I haven't seen this. I don't know if you have, B-Lo, but there was a trailer for a new movie called Big Fan out today about a New York Giants fan that gets severely beat up by his favorite player at a bar. He keeps the assault quiet because he wants the guy to play. Now, Doc, you're not reading this along with me, but Adam actually wrote he kept the assault quiet and not quiet. Fred would have read quite. And then he would have looked and said,
he doesn't have a spell checker?
You got to read English. You got to type in English. So he keeps the assault quiet because he wants the guy to play, but all of his friends and family think he's a wimp and want him to turn the player in, pressing charges. Looks good. It stars Patton Oswalt, and that's the guy from King of Queens there, Spence.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So let's say this. This October, one of you guys gets put in the hospital by Brady. Would you turn him in knowing that every fan would want you dead for getting him suspended for a season, or would you possibly let it go for the team's sake? Me personally, I would contact Brady and ask for him to have it settled behind the scenes and ask for his wife's company for 35 minutes.
Hell no.
So we could play Madden 09 together. Also, seeing how you have all met Brady, is there anyone there that thinks they could take him in a fight? I know this is a nonsense debate, but as long as we don't have to hear another two-hour debate about a GM who sucks becoming a commentator, blah, 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 then go ahead, debate. It's the offseason.
See,
I use that as a springboard. We're going to get into Matt Millen too, because we have a lot of emails about Matt Millen. So what do you think? Would you, if you legitimately got beat up, like in a mean way, like you were out somewhere and
not like got run over by a player on the sideline
right,
of the game. Okay.
Right. Well, you have been beaten up by a player.
I have been
sort of beaten up by a player. But if this was like legitimate.
Right. Got
you into were
an
out
argument.
Somewhere and someone and I just started wailing on you.
Yeah.
Would you keep that quiet for the sake of the team?
Well, first of all, I would think that there'd be no way to keep. I mean, if it was in a back alley and it was really legitimately just the two of us, I guess I'd have a decision to make. But no, I mean, I need to explain. Would I keep it quiet? No, I'd need to explain. I'd want to explain myself. Why am I all beaten up? No,
First of all, it wouldn't even be a consideration that I'm keeping it quiet for the team.
Right,
quote unquote.
Right. I wouldn't keep it quiet.
Now, if I wasn't working here, I'm just a fan. I'm not connected or whatever.
Yeah.
But I would like to think as a grown man, if I got beaten up, I wouldn't necessarily have to go and, you know, make a big thing out of it anyway. You know, I mean, well, regardless of who it was.
If it was Tom Brady,
I mean,
it would
if I got beat up
bigger...
by 10 guys
listen,
in an alley somewhere, I mean, obviously I'm going to go
when
to the
Tom
cops
Brady got,
I was attacked.
When Tom Brady got, and I'm doing quotation fingers here, saved from the Charles River a couple weeks ago, that became a massive story. If Tom Brady beat any fan up, unless it truly was in a back alley in the middle of the night and no one saw or heard anything, it would get out there. It would be known. It would get out there. Now, the question was, would any of is there anyone here, I think, that thinks they could beat up Tom Brady or whatever? I don't know if I'd be able to take his son. I'm a wimp.
Yeah.
I'm a wimp.
I agree.
I try to go to the gym. I try to keep in shape. I can't beat up anyone. It would be a good battle between me and little Jack Brady.
I've been in a fight since the third grade.
But you got many of them in second, third grade, probably.
Except with women.
No, I'm talking about a real fight.
Real
no,
knockdown.
I haven't been in a real fight.
And you're
in a long
from
time.
Everett.
Probably like since even before college.
You lived
really
in Everett
in
for 30-something years.
I mean,
you've been involved in competitive sports for a long time. I mean, you're
but
an
in
accomplished
Everett, you know,
athlete.
You grow up in Everett and like, you know, there's like four or five guys that you hang around with, and one day you guys you're in a fist fight with, and then the next day you're hanging out.
But you did get
in
the corner
with the same guy.
But you did get in those fist fights.
Sure.
But those are those don't really count.
Long time ago.
Those don't really count.
No.
Well,
we're going back 30 years.
We are. You're not that old, Paul.
Sure I am.
Yeah. I know. Anyways, I don't think I'd really want to try to beat up any NFL player.
No.
From the kicker on down to the strongest linebacker.
I mean, if you're asking me in the NFL circles if Tom Brady is the toughest guy, no, I don't think so. I think there's very few guys that he could probably handle in a one-on-one fight in the NFL. But, you know, in relation to a pro athlete to, you know, pro guys that sit on their butts for a living, that's not really much of a contest.
No.
Web radio at Patriots.com. I love them. I love July.
July.
I mean,
you can only get these in July.
I love July. Web radio at Patriots.com. Let's see. This is the Matt Millen thing. Now, you obviously know all about the Matt Millen thing, B-Lo, because you know
I'm a TV guy.
You're a well-learned TV guy and an NBA guy too.
Try to be.
But basically, our point was just because Matt Millen stunk as a GM. Matter of fact, you could make an argument the worst ever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Doesn't mean that he can't get another job in the NFL. He can't be an analyst. And Fred's point was, why would you put him on TV? He forfeits all credibility. To which Andy and I were saying, well, no, he was a very good analyst before he did GM. Why wouldn't he be now? So maybe there's a few people out there that might know him a little bit better. And, you know, certainly no one in Detroit wants to watch him. But right. I just didn't really see what the connection was. He thinks it's a nightmare. We think it's overrated.
I would say it's overrated. I mean, it's almost like he's changing jobs, changing industries altogether. If one of us decided to go into accounting because we stunk at football broadcasting, I think it's almost like you're going
into
that
accounting firm say, you can't hire him. Did you see how the lead he tried to write for that story last week?
And while it's within the same industry, I think it's such a different job. What he's asked to do as an analyst, it's a combination of analyzing a whole bunch of different things. Even though he was a bad general manager, I'm betting he can still watch a football game and be able to analyze, dissect, criticize, praise where needed within a game. And I think that the fact, like he may be very good at that. Plus, he's seen as an eloquent, interesting guy. And I think, hey, the fact that he failed as a GM should not affect. It won't affect the way. I won't sit there watching him on TV and saying, oh, yeah, wow, good point. Oh, no, wait a minute. He drafted four straight disastrous wideouts as a Detroit Lion general manager. What he just said is wrong. Not at all.
That was our point with Fred, and a couple of people agree with us. Reed from the Cape, he says, I can't believe – first he says, hey, PFW guys in Squidward. That's Eric.
What is it?
Did you ever watch SpongeBob?
I'm vaguely aware of SpongeBob. Never mind. No, I haven't watched SpongeBob.
I was listening to the debate on Matt Millen, and I couldn't believe what Fred was saying. Fred,
I don't have two kids, two toddlers.
Just because Millen is going back to television doesn't mean ratings will go down, but they won't go up either. Everyone has a pregame show that they watch religiously, no matter who gets brought on. Also, most people jump from pregame show to pregame show to hear what everyone says. Before Fox and CBS come on, I jump between ESPN and NFL Network, even though I hate Ditka, Marshall Faulk, and Tom Jackson. I hate Bill Cowher and Dan Marino, but I still watch the CBS pregame show. I watch the pregame show on NBC, even though everyone except Harrison and Dungy, I don't like everyone except Harrison and Dungy. Why the hell is Keith Olbermann on that pregame show? He is more annoying than Eric. Besides, Fred. Besides Fred, Millen seems like a nice dude and probably has some intelligent things to say. And in Paul's words, the fans are stupid, and 75% of them have no idea who Millen is anyway. So well, I wouldn't necessarily go that far. That's one of my things that I will be labeled with. You know, when we're talking about Steve McNair and how he's going to be remembered, mm-hmm. I'm going to be remembered as the guy who said the fans are stupid because Fred said that once about me, and it's stuck.
Jason, maybe I just drink to get drunk.
Yeah, I'll be remembered for that line, too.
Here's the other thing with Millen. I think that what's the difference between a failed GM and an accomplished player? I think that
I agree.
Why is an accomplished player seen as, oh, a great analyst? I mean, Emmitt Smith was as accomplished a player as you get in the NFL and was a horrific analyst. And I think that just because you've played well and you're an accomplished player doesn't mean you're going to be a good analyst. And just because you are a failed GM doesn't mean you're a bad analyst. I think they're apples and oranges. Playing and coaching and being a general manager in a league is almost a different profession than being an analyst. You can do one well without doing the other one well. And I think we see that all the time with these ex-players that, you know, these networks bring on ex-players. And certainly they're not just picking and choosing out of a hat. They're doing they have some basis for hiring these guys. And more often than not, they're decent analysts, but every now and then you get a bad apple, and I think just because you played well doesn't mean you can analyze well. Just because you GM bad doesn't mean you can analyze bad.
I got to give William Berry the nod because he didn't just let my little shot go. He writes back in, Matt, false start Light is not completely thinking about the game? Wow, breaking news. Yes, when Light gets beat, Mankins or someone in the huddle will rib him. I don't think that will happen.
Not at all. That's not like... This is not the equivalent of, like, remember when Brady had those magazine pictures?
Now, that, you get ragged on for that.
Yeah. No, but...
Making love to a goat, you get ragged on.
And you know what?
That.
Enough with... when I hear someone say, well, he's writing a column, this one-time column, and he's taken away from football, these guys are allowed to do certain things like this in their off time. I'm sure Matt Light is taking care of his business football-wise this first week of July and not just penning articles for Sports Illustrated. Not worried about that. We got more emails in the docket there?
A lot more.
Are they getting erased without you?
We got a lot more emails coming in. No, they're coming in with that annoying two-line, three-line thing that always bothers me. But, no, we have a lot of emails coming in. That's great. Let's see. The Millen thing, Josh says, are we having this argument again? Fred was wrong. Who cares? Move on, please. That's Josh and Arlington. No, we're not having that debate again. I just wanted to bring it up because some of the emailers wanted to wait and see. Here's the thing about the show, Josh, that you should know because you are a longtime listener. Not everybody listens live.
You know, we'll do it live.
People download the podcast like the doctor did mm-hmm. on his vacation, and they listen to it after the fact. So sometimes after the fact, people will listen to a podcast and they'll say, I want to chime in on that, and that's what happens.
And
so
that's the beauty
we don't just want to dismiss all of those people that didn't get a chance to listen and participate live. We're hopefully going to have those people listening after this show sometime, and they'll hear that we discussed their comments.
And that's the beauty of some of these shows in this time of year where there isn't necessarily brand new juicy topics in between every show. You can kind of keep some certain topics alive.
Like Basil, he says, all right, let's be honest about things, fellas. Most people who watch football wouldn't know who Matt Millen is and wouldn't know that he even once played football. Furthermore, the Lions were a joke even while Millen was playing. So to say he killed them is foolish. They had two of the all-time great running backs with Billy Sims and Barry Sanders, and those teams still always were bad. So his point is fans don't care who the GM did as a GM.
The bottom line is I hear some people say sometimes in TV, all it really is some sort of content so that the commercials don't bump into each other. That's really all it is.
Yeah. TG and NJ, who is another long timer, he needs you to calm down. Says, B-Lo, calm down. What do you guys feed him? Too much coffee, man.
They feed me roast beef sandwiches and fries from CBS.
In regards to the great debate, what's missing is the opinion of a Dolphins fan. Ask them, would they trade their perfect 72 season for a couple of Super Bowl wins? You got to figure Dan Marino would say yes. This is an example of what I'm talking about, how people aren't necessarily looking at the argument as we're presenting it.
Right.
Yes, I would agree, TG. Dan Marino would absolutely say yes. Dan Marino's not a Dolphins fan. Dan Marino was a player who never was able to win one. I am quite certain if you ask Tom Brady, would he rather win three more or go 19-0, he would rather win three more. As he says, which one is the best one?
The next one.
The next one. So to ask a player is not the same as asking a fan. A fan might say, well, yeah, if I would rather have two or three more, as you put it, rather than have gone undefeated in 72. That's not the question.
Doctor, can we get Mercury Morris on the horn?
That's not the
question.
Can we get
him? Yeah, I'll give him a call right now.
Well, I don't think we have enough time for that.
No?
We had
you need to get, what do you call him, Ding and Dong?
Ding and Dong.
Ding
well,
and Dong.
I usually call him something different, but we're on
you
the
can't,
radio.
Can't say that on the air. Nope, look at, they come in, they ask for beverages.
Demand stuff.
Not for you guys.
This is unreal.
Two of the youngest guys you'll ever see working for an NFL team right here.
16 and 17?
Chris and Craig.
Is this what we call the transition?
He even put the crossover headphones on. No, this is not the crossover.
But did he turn the headphones on is the question. I did. Wow.
I told him to come down. You don't have to put yours on, I don't think, over there, Craig. Those are already on. I told him to come down at 1 o'clock. Of course, they can't follow instructions.
No.
And that's Chris, because Craig would have. I'm sure that Craig followed the instructions.
I hate to be late.
Chris has been in my office four times this morning since I told him that he was coming on.
Is it Tom Coughlin that says on time is 5 minutes early? Or 5 minutes early is on time.
And
so
I'm his ideal player.
You are his ideal player. Can you play?
No. Once.
No. Oh, once. Yeah.
Back in the day.
Let's see. Josh has a follow-up, by the way, about the Matt Millen thing. He says, I understand about the latency of the podcast. However, that was a particularly brutal argument to listen to. As you should know, Paul, as a longtime host of the show, fans of the show are bound to write in and beg for mercy when all you do, when you all go bat poop crazy on a particular topic, just doing my part.
Did you insert the poop, or was
we
that...
We talked about it for about 20 minutes, by the way.
Yeah.
That's going bat poop, I guess.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway.
Chunk of the show.
I think Josh is just mad because Andy's not here, and Josh hates Andy.
He's the one.
Josh hates Andy.
Not too many people are mad when Andy's not here. You should know.
Oh, you ain't lying.
Not too many people are mad, my friend.
Let's see. Where else can we go here? William actually had a good proposal for us, B-Lo.
Yeah.
William Berry, mm-hmm. You know my favorite email.
Yeah, your favorite email.
He wants us to do play-by-play of preseason games. He wants the PFW guys to do that somewhere on the internet.
Okay, so not in place of the current.
Well, if that could be possible, obviously that's impossible.
Right.
But he thinks that
it's separate entity.
Right. If we could somehow put together, even if we released it as a podcast or did it on a DVD or something and sent it out, he says that. The preseason broadcasts that will suck will soon be upon us.
Patriots on defense, Thomas, Bruschi, and Colvin.
Bruschi. By the third quarter, when Vollmer or someone is in, I'll be interested in his quickness off the snap and if he can hold his own against the other team's projects. Me and the other people will still be watching. Unfortunately, we won't even be told he's even in the game as they rehash Brady's injuries and weddings. The only way that we'll know is if an official announces that he was overpowered.
There was no foul on the play. It was not a hold. The defender was just overpowered.
Good job, Doctor.
Maybe if the Patriots sign Brett Favre and use him as a punt returner in the fourth quarter, they'll tell us that he's in. Maybe. If one guy is begging you to take his money for a Mystery Science Theater 3000 style or a PFW guys without the overpaid broadcasters on DVD, maybe there are others. If you move on it now, in August, it will be like, if you wait till August, it'll be too late for this year and forgotten next year. For now, this will be alone, but in August, there will be more. Of course, it will be too late to take advantage of the market. That's William Berry begging the PFW guys to get together and do play-by-play.
It's along the lines of Mike and Mike. Games. Mike and Mike on ESPN doing a Monday Night Football game.
Can you imagine us doing play-by-play?
Can
you imagine Andy's attention span doing play-by-play of a preseason game?
I think you'd have to tone it down a little bit.
Well, he'd be too concerned with, what food options do we have in between this quarter. Eric would probably be, focusing solely on the punter. I think it would be a debacle. Fred would obviously swear a few times. You'd be all right, Paul. I mean, you've got a little more experience. I'm sure you've done some Northeastern games, maybe.
Well, I actually have.
Yeah, you have.
But that's neither here nor
there. It isn't here or there, but I think you'd be a little more. It would be a little more fluid.
Was he making fun of me when I was reading the emails? So I wasn't paying attention to you.
I think he's sucking up.
All right.
I think we should toot his
horn. Maybe he thinks I have a ability to give him a job. He's like me to Perella all of a sudden. Always angling
please,
for the next
Paul.
Job. And just so you know, Josh, TG and NJ wants to chime in a little bit. Last week, you guys got into another good debate. That's good debate.
Good debate, not great debate. Huh?
This time about Matt Millen And does he deserve to be working in the media and all that? Paula, you mentioned that Pat Kerwin was another example of a former GM not working in the NFL who now is working as an analyst whose performance as a GM wasn't good. Not going back to the 40s like yourself, I can't recall how Kerwin did with the Jets. So just how bad was he? How long was he there? Was he a GM somewhere else before or after? He wasn't terrible. He wasn't anything like Matt Millen.
But he was an average
run-of-the-mill GM who got fired and went from that to his analyst's duties now and is now considered one of the better analysts out there on the Internet. That was the only point I was trying to make. So he's not anywhere. TG, I'm not comparing him to Matt Millen in terms of his GM performance. He says, don't get me wrong, I don't think Millen should be blacklisted, so to speak. It's just that after his performance with the Lions, his credibility is in doubt. Crazy as it is, I have more faith in Andy Hart's player analysis than Matt Millen's right now, just as long as it's not Kevin Falk, of course. You remember Andy Hart said Kevin Falk downsided. He was
downside of his career?
Yeah. Diminishing skills, he said last year.
It's not so much that, I mean, I clearly wouldn't want Matt Millen evaluating the players to add to my team. I wouldn't want him being the GM of my fantasy team.
I wouldn't want to be the GM, but I don't think that precludes him from being able to analyze football.
Exactly. I think you can have him sit down on Sundays and analyze what happened in games, who's doing well, criticize where needed, praise where needed, and be able to touch on probably virtually every aspect of what's going on in the game. He's not there to say whether or not he's not there to criticize and critique every single move made by one individual team. He's there to analyze football games. I think he did that well before he had just a miserable stint with the Lions, and I'm sure he'll do it again. And you know what? If this year goes well, by next year, I don't think this will be in the discussion. Everyone will be back to considering Matt Millen.
Well, that was
an
the point I made is this will last about 2 or 3 weeks.
Right.
Then everybody will forget it and say, "Wow, I'll take what he says as good because he's bound to be right about some things, and some I'll ignore, and then they'll go from there.
And
it won't have anything to do with how bad he was with the Lions, which was bad, historically bad."
Yeah. And part of these pregame shows and postgame shows, it's about having your analysts say entertaining, interesting, and maybe controversial things that are going to be talked about during the week and bring some more attention to your show. And that's part of it, and Matt Millen will bring some of that to the table, certainly, as you said, early on in the season, and we'll see how it goes from there. But, I think there are far worse people that you could have analyzing games on TV, pregame, postgame shows, and all that than Matt Millen.
Is he doing color, or is it just like analysis?
I think he's doing color for the NFL Network games, right?
Yeah. It's Chris Collins.
But he is
later in the season.
But
for the
not,
NFL
he's
Network
really game. Not even that big though. He's really an analyst in the on the pregame shows.
Yeah,
right.
So I just not even like a color guy.
I just don't even understand how he can comment on a player or like who to expect to play well when he can't draft someone number 2 overall with even a decent career.
Now, why? Okay, let me ask you this.
Tell
this
me,
is something
tell
that
me
came
which
up.
Guy that he drafted that no one else would have drafted.
I mean, you got to see some character issues with Charles Rogers.
You did.
Mike Williams didn't play the year before he drafted him. Like, how can you make those picks?
But no. He made terrible picks. But let me, and this is something that came up earlier that I mentioned before you guys came in. Take a look at it from the perspective of if there's a very good, well-accomplished player, a Hall of Fame player, does the fact that he was a good player mean that he's going to be a good analyst? No, it doesn't. Does the fact that a guy was a poor GM mean that he's going to be a bad analyst?
I fall back
no.
on the guys that he picked. I mean, Mike Williams is a little bit of a different situation, but the guy—I mean, Roy Williams, Charles Rogers, these guys that everybody would have picked. I'm sorry. Sure. I mean, if they didn't go in the top 10, they would have been from 11 to 15. It's not like they took guys at the top of the first round that would have been third rounders.
But what about right. what about picking
so if he,
four
if,
receivers in,
they,
in the first round?
He wouldn't have done that had the other ones panned out. Detroit probably won't pick another wide receiver high because Calvin Johnson's a stud. They won't need to now. But when you pick Charles Rogers and he doesn't work out, and you pick Mike Williams and he doesn't work
out, but this is all
beside
the point.
You still need that position.
This is all beside the point. We can all agree that he was one of the worst eras in football history for one team. The stint that Matt Millen. We all agree with that.
Yeah,
and whether
he's terrible.
We can nitpick every move, and most of them are bad. Some are good. Whatever. We can argue those. It's still that's beside the point. The fact that he stunk as a GM, to me, doesn't mean that if I sit there and watch him analyze a game on the post-game show on NBC or wherever, that I'm going to say, you know what, what he just said about that tackle in the Indianapolis San Diego game, what he just said, it cannot be valid because he stunk. It has nothing to do with it. I think it's as if he's in two totally different industries.
Right. I completely understand what you're saying, but when you compare it to a player becoming an analyst, I think it's different. I mean, Matt Millen's job was to decide who was a good football player for the Detroit Lions, and then.
And now his job is to analyze the league, and he was great at that before he was ever a GM.
Well, yeah, and he was a good player,
that's
too.
Why so that's obviously why they took him back and hired him.
So I don't see why one precludes you from being able to do the other. Now, if a team was going to say, you know what, I've seen that guy on TV. I want to hire him for my front office as an assistant. He was the GM, and maybe he wasn't suited for that, but I want to get his thought. Then I would say, you know what, I think he was so bad that he should forfeit any further jobs in any NFL front office. He was that bad. But as a guy who can talk about the game, I just don't get it. Now, the majority is with Chris.
Which I don't agree with. And I think, you know, you've got some – I'm trying to think off the top of my head. You got some players –
Don't think. It can only hurt the ball.
I know. You got some player. It's July. We're not supposed to think if you're involved in the NFL.
See, TJ, you thought it was coffee. This is just B-Lo.
This is just me.
Just
you get me on a roll, you know, and I just go. And I, you know, I am going to have to go soon. But I think if you get some players –
Can you bring me back another Diet Pepsi?
Can I send an intern to do it?
Can you get – no. You know,
no.
That's ridiculous.
You know, Paul
– Especially when it's warm. If it was cold, I might have said
– Oh, I see. I hear you. I think that there's players who were not very good on the field who can then turn out to be very good analysts. Help me out. I'm trying to think of examples. I mean, obviously, part of becoming an analyst is because you're a high profile guy.
Well, I'll give you one.
Hasselbeck is decent.
Tim Hasselbeck
is
very good.
Trent Dilfer is very good.
I think they both stunk.
But those are two examples that. Sean King, yeah, Sean King's another one. I don't know how good he is on TV, though. But all I'm saying is I think that playing the game, coaching the game, being a general manager, it's almost as if it's a separate industry from being a TV analyst. I really feel that way, and I feel that just because you were good or bad in that other capacity on the field inside the NFL doesn't mean you're going to be equally good or bad analyzing. And I think Matt Millen was very good at it before 2000, whatever, that he took over the Lions, and he'll probably be good again, and it'll be a good good move to have him on TV.
All right, B-Lo, we'll let you get back over to pretend that you're putting a show together or something.
It's grueling, Paul, and like I said, you come off these five-day weekends. I don't know if you've experienced with these, but these five-day weekends, you come back, and it just hits you like a ton of bricks.
So we'll be back with hour number two of PFW in Progress with Ding and Dong, otherwise known as the interns.
This is NFL and Patriot Hall of Famer Andre Tippett inviting you to join me at the Hall at Patriot Place presented by Raytheon for the next installment of the Hall Speaker Series on Friday, July 24th at 6:30 p.m. This is your chance to spend an evening with me, ask questions about my career, and get an autograph. Tickets are on sale now and are just $25 and include your admission to the Hall. Get yours now by calling 866-995-2456 or buy online at the Hall at patriotplace.com. And I'll see you on July 24th at the Hall.
One passion, one cup, one chance to see it. The 2009 CONCACAF Gold Cup. Watch three top-class matches for the price of one. Saturday, July 11th, 4 p.m. at Gillette Stadium. Revolution versus Kansas City Wizards. United States versus Haiti. And Honduras versus Grenada. Call 1-877-GET-REVS or go to goldcup.org. That's 1-877-GET-REVS or goldcup.org. The 2009 CONCACAF Gold Cup. Don't miss it.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is the ultimate shopping, dining, and entertainment destination in New England. What's your Patriot Place experience?
We took the kids to a movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe and finally went to Red Robin. The burgers were amazing. It was so much fun. Everyone loved it.
We had girls' night out at Patriot Place last weekend. A little shopping, dinner at Davio's. It's just like the one in Boston. And we had drinks at the cutest little wine bar called Tastings.
Experience Patriot Place, a once-in-a-lifetime experience every day.
Honestly, I'm here about once a week. I always find great deals at Christmas Tree Shop and Old Navy, and the shoes at Off-Broadway are unbelievable.
Patriot Place is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough with convenient and free parking.
Bass Pro Shop and Eastern Mountain Sports have everything I need for my camping and hiking trips. And we love CBS Scene Restaurant. They've got about a million TVs, and their outdoor deck looks right into Gillette Stadium. It's so cool.
Log on to patriot-place.com for more information. Patriot Place. Everyone wins.
In a summer filled with concerts, one band will light the sky like no other.
Fire!
For the first time ever outdoors in New England, Gillette Stadium proudly welcomes AC/DC. Live in concert, July 28th. AC/DC. July 28th, Gillette Stadium. Tickets are on sale now for AC/DC at Ticketmaster.com. The Gillette Stadium box office or 1-800-745-3000. The one concert you cannot miss. AC/DC at Gillette Stadium. Presented by Live Nation.
Paul Perillo prides himself on being the old-timer of the PFW crew.
Going back to the 40s with Paul.
Well, let's face it, it's actually Andy who makes fun of Paul for being an old-timer. But just because he was born in the 40s or something, it doesn't exactly mean Paul has all the answers. In fact, it seems like just about everything Paul's come up with, he didn't come up with.
I was going to say he's rated the way he should be, too. I was going to say, I read something. This is what I was going to say, just on this topic.
I agree with that wholeheartedly.
That's the way I was going to say. That's probably on mission statement right there.
Paul. I was going to say, you know why it is.
What's the matter, Paul?
No, I was going to say it was before 85. So I was going to say that, but I don't even know.
Jeez, Paul, what do you know? We're not sure if you ever had an original thought, and even that your catchphrases might be stolen. Right, Eddie Mac?
Maybe I just drink to get drunk.
That one never gets old either. I got to tell you, Doc, that's a good one. That's a keeper. Never realized how many times I say, I was going to say. But I said it a lot, and I still say it a lot. Anyway, we've transitioned to the lowest-rated portion of the show, PFW in Progress. Brian Lowe was kind enough to drop by and give us an hour, but they are trying to put together an episode of Patriots Today for Wednesday, so he has some work to do. So he stepped aside, and you can catch that show again, like I said, tomorrow, Patriots Today on Patriots.com. And also, I wanted to throw in, he is going to be doing a special preseason edition of the Fantasy Lowdown, Doc, sometime August.
Beginning of August, yes. It'll be a half-hour podcast only. It will not be okay. Live, but he'll get you all set to pick your fantasy
So
team.
Sometime early in August, be on the lookout for one of the least informed fantasy football experts that you can read on the net or here on these very airwaves. Brian Lowe, Fantasy Lowdown. We like him so much, we allow him to spew that nonsense in the paper as well. But now we're going to have a special treat for you because we have...
The show just got a lot worse.
Two of
quick.
The least productive interns that PFW has had in quite some time. One of them,
boring.
A two-time loser who's come back for a second year, and Chris Rigoli. And he's brought his partner in crime, Craig Beyer, right?
Yes, sir.
Craig Beyer. So they're going to join us today for the second hour. We talked a little bit about Steve McNair, guys. We've talked about Matt Light, serving as Peter King's fill-in on the Tuesday morning quarterback. Talked about Matt Millen. You guys heard a little bit of that, tail end of that. So pretty much all topics are open. But why don't you guys, before we get into any football stuff, why don't you guys tell us a little bit about yourselves and how you got there, how you got here.
So I...
Make sure you speak into the mic. Is the mic on? Okay, that light's on. I'm getting the nod. All right.
And use your name.
This is Craig Beyer here, and I've been here at PFW for about 2 weeks now.
Yeah.
And
good times.
I got here after graduating from the University of Hartford, and I am under the wing of Chris Rigoli, who's teaching me the ropes.
Wow.
That's a tough
one.
I went there.
All
right. My name is Chris Rigoli, and I think it says a lot about Fred Kirsch for hiring me a second time. That brings his credibility down quite a bit.
Freaking idiot.
It's true.
Yeah, no, but so this is my second year on board with PFW, and I'm going to be a sophomore at the University of Richmond.
He's only a sophomore.
Just a youngin'.
I'm really surprised, not only by how little you guys have to say and offer. You know, you guys never saw. I can't even include Craig. I can't even include
I'm the one
Craig.
That says all the nonsense.
It's you that is always, it's Chris that's always running off. And
keep a low profile.
With all his little theories and ideas. But while Craig is doing all the work, I'm really stunned at how little you guys have to add here. But we're going to get back into the Matt Millen thing. Seems to be never ending. Dan in Fairfax, the problem with the argument in favor of Millen being a broadcaster is it's too logical. Normally that would be a punchline and would mean I would agree with it. But in this case, I mean it is a criticism. I agree that it doesn't mean he would be a bad analyst. However, Matt Millen has evokes a visceral reaction from fans who thought he was a joke of a general manager. I just can't take him seriously, even if he is good at being an analyst. I will always go back to thinking how bad he was. Just wanted to chime in on that. That's the argument against Matt Millen. I can't really argue with that, but I just think that that would last about 2 weeks. And then you'd say, wow, the guy knows what he's talking about.
I just, every time I think of Matt Millen, like, I've been a fan of, you know, the Barry Sanders Lions. Like, he was my favorite athlete growing up. And, to see him take over in 2000 and just absolutely ruin a franchise, I think they had the worst record in that time of anyone in the league. It's just, that's all that comes to mind. I think it's a different comparison when you talk, but you could look at someone like Joe Gibbs, who everyone said, like, the game might have passed him by. I know the time span was a little bit longer, but maybe Matt Millen will come back and he won't be the same analyst that he was before he joined the Lions or when he was in the 90s or whatever. I don't know. If he's not good,
then he'll lose his job.
Right.
He's not very. Emmett Smith was terrible, and he didn't last.
Stars.
Right. He didn't last long. You know,
I'm gonna have to see it before I comment too much on how he does there.
All right, John in South Carolina, we're gonna try to change topics here with the Millen stuff. If you have anything else to add about Millen, you could throw it in here. We'll probably get to it at webradio@patriots.com. But let's see if we can get some more topics and maybe get some different opinions. We do have two fresh faces here, Patriots fans, Patriots followers. You guys know everything that Andy, Eric, and I are going to say every week, and certainly everybody knows what Fred's going to say because it never changes unless, you know, the people that we're talking about happen to leave the Patriots and go somewhere else, and then it just, you know, not hard to figure out. You just flip-flop 180 degrees the other way.
They become Satan.
Yes,
so
they do.
John in South Carolina has been rewatching the 2007 season, and no, I don't live in my parents' basement. Here are some thoughts. Maroney was a beast in the playoffs. Many of his runs came behind Evans, especially in the San Diego game. Who replaces Evans now? You have any idea for a fullback type player? I honestly
thought Patrick Pass was going to be.
I go with Russ Hochstein, who they used in that regard last year, very successfully.
That's a body you can throw in.
Yeah, he's been down there a lot in the goal line situations and has some experience there. I think they. Should maybe bring someone in for the beginning of training camp and see how it works out and if makes a roster spot. I know it's tough. What do they got, 5 running backs right now on the roster?
Yeah, I also think you can use a little of 2 back sets with Sammy Morris and whoever.
Right.
Sammy Morris in front of Maroney, in front of Fred Taylor.
Right.
I think he's a bigger guy. He's a physical guy. I'm not saying that he's a traditional
plow horse lead blocker,
but neither was Heath Evans. And certainly Patrick Pass is not that player, and they've used those guys in the past in that capacity. So I think there's some different things they can do, and Belichick always will find different combinations.
I think Sammy Morris could fill that role. It might take time for him to figure it out, but if he's going to be behind, you know, Fred Taylor and Lawrence Maroney, he might just have to. He might not have a choice. But
yeah, I think if there's going to be playing time for all of those guys, if they're all healthy, you're right, Craig. You might have to do some different things just to get them some playing time. The second thing, John has a couple of questions here. I think Stallworth scared offenses, talking about Dante Stallworth in 07, because
scared
he was
defenses.
He wrote scared offenses, but he didn't
scares
mean scared.
A lot of people now.
Scares you know,
pedestrian
construction workers.
Yes.
Scared defenses because he was so good after the catch. He would get something out of nothing, and every time he touched the ball, the defense would worry about extra yards. I know Galloway has great speed and can stretch the field, but is he the same kind of threat after he catches the ball? I think he's that kind of a threat, but in a different way. He's an over-the-top guy, and he's going to take it. You know, he's a big average per catch guy like Stallworth, but he's not necessarily going to break tackles the way Stallworth was uncanny like that.
Yeah.
Right.
Small guy.
He's got wheels.
He was an Anquan Boldin type,
but really, really
degree.
Thick in the waist, you know, he wasn't big and physical, but he ran physically, like he could break tackles.
Good balance, yeah. I think Galloway, like we said, is fast and get the down the field speed, but like I just said a second ago, Stallworth, I think, was kind of like the poor man's Anquan Boldin when it came to catching a hitch or a slant and then breaking a tackle or two. But, I mean, I still think you'll get a lot of yak production from Joey Galloway.
Yeah, I agree. I think Galloway's going to replace Stallworth, provided that he stays healthy. Now, he's always had issues with his legs, but Stallworth did too.
Right.
So we'll have to see how that unfolds. But I think if healthy, Galloway is a better player than Stallworth, and I think the offense can certainly get back to that 2007 form. This last one is a little bit of a job for you guys. He thinks that John thinks that Benjamin Watson is one of the best 10 tight ends in the league, and he gets a bad rap. Can you prove to me why I should see him as a bust? Can we come up with 10 tight ends off the top of our heads that we think are better than Benjamin Watson?
Well, I give one reason.
Gonzalez.
He's got two hands like feet.
Yeah, he's got bad hands.
Yeah, I think, you know, quickly off the top of my head, you got Gonzalez, as Craig said. You got Antonio Gates.
Yeah.
You got Dallas Clark. You got who else? Why am I drawing a blank? Todd Heap. That's
Heap,
four.
I don't know if Shockey's still in that conversation.
I think he's probably better than – well, I don't know if I would be willing to put
even
him.
Miller on –
Heath Miller, I think, is a better tight end.
He's had better numbers than
Jason Witten is clearly a better tight end. So you're up to six right there without really even giving it any thought to some guys that maybe are lesser known that are, you know, more blocking types. Because I don't think I think Watson is a subpar receiver and an average blocker.
Right.
You know, I think Daniel Graham is better than Benjamin Watson.
I think he's
Daniel Graham to me is a subpar receiver, but he's an outstanding blocker.
Right.
So I would put him a notch ahead of Watson, too. I think that the Watson thing would be more magnified if this offense wasn't so good. I think people have been able to, they look at it and say, well, how bad can he be? They scored all these points and they get all these yards, but, well, he's really not a part of it.
If he had a Tony Gonzalez responsibility where he was a one or two option as opposed to a three or a four option, I think more people would recognize.
Well, he was the number one option in 2006, I believe, when all the wide receivers were gone and he couldn't do much with it.
Right. I think that's when people realize that stretches the field, vertical, athletic, but, I mean, when the ball is there, it's kind of a wild card.
Doesn't have the hands, and it's a liability for that
offense. And he says, thanks for a great show, most likely because Eric's not there. I would have to agree. Thank you, John. Let's see what else we have here. Danny says, are you worried at all that the Patriots are built like a dome team? I find that home field in December and January is almost a disadvantage because the passing game, the strength of the team, becomes more difficult. The Patriots won big playoff games in the snow, cold, and wind in the past with strong defense and a more balanced offense. It's not a bad thought. What do you guys think?
I think they can win. I think they can win in the cold weather. They've done it before, but they are aging too. It's a significant factor. But I think if their defense holds up, throughout this season, and once it gets cold, they'll be able to. Belichick will have schemes for them to get it done, because anything else is unacceptable.
I think if you look back to 2007, where the offensive production the first eight games of the season was just through the roof. I mean, 35, 42, 49. Like they were scoring points like it was nobody's business. And Randy Moss was a huge part of that. And his production tailed off significantly at the end of the season, too. Not necessarily a cold weather receiver. I do agree that this team is more built kind of like the 2000, 2001 Rams, where they kind of played in the dome and just ran around everybody. But I think with the running backs that they have, I mean, I'm not the biggest Lawrence Maroney fan, but if you take into consideration a healthy Sammy Morris and a healthy Fred Taylor, I don't think they can be a team that goes 20, 25 carries a game the first 10, 11 games of the season and then dramatically shift the way they do things and get up to 40, 45 carries a game. But I think if they maintain a balanced offense throughout the season, I think it'll be fine.
Yeah, I think the key will be, and the part of the email that I really agreed with, was defense. Because points are going to go down in the playoffs. First of all, you're playing better teams. So it's more difficult. But also, you're not going to have situations that you're going to be able to just throw the ball all over the place.
Right.
The way you do for most of the season. But I'm not worried about that offensively, because I do think the Patriots are so versatile in the way they do things. And I saw it in 07. John mentioned two emails ago They had a very good running game in 07. Now, that's the year they scored 589 points and broke the record and did all those things. But in the playoffs, when the weather got bad, they were able to line up and run the football pretty effectively in the two playoff games against Jacksonville and San Diego. Now, the Super Bowl, it all fell apart. Nothing worked in the Super Bowl offensively. But the problem was defensively in recent years, I don't think they've been championship caliber. And in my opinion, until that changes, that weather is going to – because that weather is taking the offense from 40 points down closer to 28 or so. And now if the defense is not that good, now they're in the game – you know, in the past, 28, 2003, 2004, 28.
No big deal.
Might as well have been 58. The game's over.
Game is over.
But right now, 28 is probably a one-score game.
The reason,
so the game is in doubt.
The reason I mention offense first, though, is kind of like the old cliche, your best offense, your best defense is a good offense. I think if they kind of get comfortable having Brady back in shotgun and slinging it around all the time, and then they get to a situation where it's cold in the playoffs and they're facing a lot of third and eights, third and nines, and they're forced to do that, the defense is going to be on the field more than they were used to anyway. So whether you're healthy or whether you're that good on defense, I think maintaining possession, maintaining a balanced offense will kind of help that defense, which is definitely not, I mean, I don't want to put them down, but they're not on par with the offense that I think they got loaded on that side of the ball. But I think possession will be a big factor down the stretch.
All right, we're going to hit the phone lines for the first time of the day. Our buddy Jim in Texas is on the line. Jim, how are you?
Paul, how are you today?
Excellent. How come I don't get a rousing introduction the way Fred gets every week? Am I that much worse than Fred?
Hello, Paul.
No, not at all. Well, the thing about the difference between you and Fred is, okay.
Competence?
He talks with his food with food in his mouth. He belches, passes gas. Every now and again, he'll drop an F-bomb on the radio. You do none of that. You're just angry, but you know what? In the last year, you've become happier. So I don't know what to tell you about you.
Did you just say in the last year I've been much happier?
Absolutely.
Really?
There's been no Andy for a couple of weeks.
You've lost that hard-hitting Andy.
I don't know why everybody thinks I'm so angry all the time.
Well, because you get in the fights at the airport, at the racetrack, on the air.
You know, Andy is such a jerk.
The racetrack.
Andy makes up stories, and he blows them up.
But there were three other people that said that you were getting into a fight in the airport.
Well, it was all made up by Andy, though.
You told me you were going to beat me up if I didn't leave your office this morning.
I did say that.
So I don't go into the office.
And you know what? You did absolutely openly threaten to kill 2G on the air. So, you know.
All right. So I'm a little angry. What are you going to do?
I mean, you know, no, but I mean, you've gotten better, though, so I don't know if it's the old age kicking in or if it's the...
Believe me, it's not intentional. I'll go back to my angry ways. I just think it was one of those things. You know, nothing bad happened for a while. What are you going to do?
What are we talking about today anyways? I'm just curious.
A little bit of everything. We talked about Matt Light filling in for Peter King on his Tuesday morning quarterback.
Okay.
He talked a lot about NFL player initiatives that he thinks are underrated. We talked a little bit about Steve McNair off the top, although we haven't had a lot of emails about Steve McNair and his obvious tragic death over the weekend. And we've continued to talk about the great debate that's gone on for almost a month now with 19-0. Talked a little bit about Matt Millen again, like we did last week, about whether or not the fact that he's the worst general manager in the history of football precludes him from being a... we all agree, but does that preclude him from getting a job in football in any capacity?
Well, I will go so far as to say when Matt Millen, I think he was like about 6-7 years ago, he went out in the field and actually competed as a referee during a game.
And oh, yeah, I remember that.
You remember that? And then he became an analyst for one of the networks, and then he became a GM. And there's never been a worse GM, I think, in the history of sports.
I agree, certainly in the NFL. I mean, I think Elgin Baylor might give him a run in the NBA. But.
That's true. Okay, I will concede you that point. But as far as I would agree with you, he is a very good analyst. I mean, go figure. He's terrible at personnel.
Yeah.
Well, it's like Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah Thomas has failed at everything with the exception of playing basketball. He was a failure as an owner. He was a failure as a GM. He was a failure as a coach. In probably three cities, now Toronto, Indianapolis, and so I mean, yeah, it doesn't mean because you're a great player.
Don't forget the CBA that he destroyed.
Well, I mean, he was the owner of the entire league, and he sunk that one too, though. And he did manage to bring down. He was the only guy I think that Larry Brown even couldn't take for more than 2 weeks. So, but you get that on your resume, so you got to go with it and you got to run with it. But
which is nice.
Let's talk some Patriots, shall we?
All right. What do you got?
Okay, Derek Burgess again. There's been more talk out of LA that he's probably going to get released. The Texans are talking about. It was on ESPN this morning. he could possibly be in the mix. Is there anybody else out there, Derek Brooks, that we've contacted him or anything like that?
Well, I don't think Derek Brooks is a possibility.
No.
I just don't think he fits. Now, great, great player. Great player.
Great career.
But, you
might
know, well, even if he's not, at 6 foot tall, I mean, he can't play outside.
Sure.
At 6 foot, 230, 235 maybe?
Well, he could be Tank Williams in this team then. Oh,
yeah,
sorry.
He could play he could play inside, even though he's a little undersized for that. I would have faith that he's so good that he could probably make that transition, but he couldn't play outside.
Are we talking Burgess or Thomas?
Brooks, Derek Brooks.
Sorry, Derek Brooks, that's what I meant.
Derek Brooks. Burgess, you know, we've talked about him, Jim, and, you know, I think he makes sense. I think he has a chance to make that transition from, you know, from the defensive end. He's played some 3-4 outside linebacker with Oakland. I wouldn't have a problem with bringing him in, but, you know, again, that's, you know, if he gets released, sure, you're not giving up anything, you know, minimum money, no risk. Otherwise, I would kind of wait and hold my cards and wait and see how these kids do in training camp, and then if I feel like I need more help, then I, you know, then I explore the Willie McGinnis of the world and those kinds of guys and bring them in on an emergency basis.
I saw Willie McGinnis on the Globe, and God love the guy. He was very productive play. He was a perfect fit for that defense. But my thought is though that he's just a little too long in the tooth.
Yeah.
You know,
well, eight sacks in 3 years he's had.
Right, and you know, but. You know, you can put it like this, too. How many sacks did Vrabel have in this scheme? What, do you have, like three last year?
Yeah, but he had 12 and a half the year before.
Well, that was an aberration, you'd admit. But, you know, for the most part, he was probably about a 3.5 to 5 sack guy a year since he's been here in general. As far as, you know, what else we got left to do, any word on any of these draft picks being signed? I'm getting kind of nervous.
No, I wouldn't be worried about that at all. You're not going to see that happen on July 4th, you know, over July 4th weekend. But from this point on... From this point on, I think you'll start to hear some, and they usually go in inverse order, the lower picks, although Ohnberger was the first one. He was, what, a fourth-round pick, I believe.
Yeah, he was a fourth-rounder.
He's the only one signed. But, I mean, I don't get worried about these things until it gets to camp. And if the first-rounder or, you know, in this case, the second-rounders are unsigned as we get to camp, then I'll get a little concerned. But otherwise, I really don't worry about that stuff.
My final thought for the day as far as in closing goes on Steve McNair, great player, certainly a lot of years, but I think his hallmark will always be his toughness. That guy, when he first came in the league, he was like about 230. He'd run over people. Like, he'd go 3rd and 5, he'd run the ball, and he'd run over two people. But during the last couple parts of his years, that guy took some titanic hits and kept coming back.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's also why, you know, he was out of the – well, he was as done – as soon as his career was cut short, unfortunately, because he was so tough. Because he would not throw the ball away and just, you know, lift the play another day. He would stay in it to the last possible minute on every single play. And I'm really sorry about the way that ended for him because, you know, no one deserves that. And obviously, that's a bad situation. But Steve Grogan was the toughest quarterback I ever saw, but until I saw Steve McNair. That guy... he was the toughest player I ever saw. And with that, you guys have a great day.
All right, Jim. We certainly would agree with his toughness, no question. Sam in Chicago does mention McNair a little bit, so I want to read his email. Says the kudos to us for keeping the voice of the Patriots alive in this downtown. Finally, we can hear about the Patriots and not about how Fred, the fried dough killer, thinks the season will be after the schedule is played. That's Fred's big thing. It's the best time to evaluate the strength of a schedule is after the season. Thanks, Fred.
You know, nice.
I can tell you how many games they're going to win after the season.
Thanks.
Usually.
I was saddened to hear about Steve McNair. Truly, his character should be emulated by players around the league. Anyways, do you think that Doc? D. Willie?
I've got no idea.
Will return. I think he's talking about McGinnis,
but I'm not sure what he's alluding to at the beginning.
Yeah, I don't either. But will return, and would his presence be helpful? I'd rather see Junior pinch hit in October or November. Thanks again for keeping the ship afloat. Sam, like I said, I just think that those are guys that emergency
backup plans. Absolutely.
I don't think you want to spend too much of your resources on those guys at this. I'd rather see what these what the young guys can do. And then if I feel like I'm in dire straits, much like in 2003 when they couldn't stop the run and they had to go out and they made a trade for Ted Washington. That,
right.
You know, that was a big difference. So,
I know we kind of beat a dead horse on this one, but what I'm still intrigued by the Julius Peppers thing. What is the price tag on him? And I know but in terms of trading like draft picks and stuff like that, I understand
a lot.
Yeah, no.
You got to give up draft picks, and you got to give up or players or something, and you got to give up a significant contract extension because he's probably not going to just want to. I'm sure the Patriots don't want him at $16.7 million or whatever he's going to be on the cap under his franchise tag. So I just think there's too many moving parts to that puzzle, too many missing pieces, I guess I should say, to that puzzle.
How do we feel?
I'm a master at butchering those.
Some quips.
Yeah. Whatever they're called.
What are you butchering?
Metaphors.
Quips.
How do we feel
Chris
about
likes Eric to call when you need him?
Quips.
Quips. Journalism.
Well, actually, Paul, they're not metaphors. They're analogies or...
They're actually similes.
Cliches.
It's not alliteration.
Well, it's not a simile.
No, it's like her ass.
There's no like her ass. That one I knew.
Cheers.
Thank you.
How do we feel about Sean Crable, though, coming in and taking that spot? But we didn't,
I'm the only one, though.
I was just going to say, we didn't... I mean, I think he's got the body to play that outside rush end/linebacker, but... What we didn't really see much from him before he got hurt. Like, I don't know.
No, he didn't play. He didn't play at all. So he's very much a rookie again.
Right.
So there's no guarantees there. Pierre Woods, 3 career starts, I believe, before he got hurt last year. So he's, again, they're young guys. We don't know a lot about them. If it doesn't work out, if you get into camp or into the preseason and you feel like you have a glaring hole, then maybe Bill has got to do something.
That's my concern, though. I don't want to get to the third game of the preseason before we decide we need to pull the trigger on something outside the roster. I mean, I personally would like to see someone come in here before July 30th.
But who's the someone?
That's why I'm asking.
See, if the someone is Willie McGinnis, then I don't want that.
I understand.
If the someone is Derek Burgess, then maybe.
So,
because it seems like there's some interest in him. But, if the someone is Julius Peppers, then by all means, got to do that now. I don't want to wait before I do something like that. But I don't think there's anybody of the caliber of Julius Peppers that you're going to be able to acquire. So
right.
For me, I'd just rather wait it out and then see if I actually need to do something or not.
How much did Ellis sign for?
Sean Ellis? Sure. $5 million guaranteed.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
Supposedly, according to reports, the Patriots offered 1.5.
I got blown out of the water.
Right. So it wasn't even close.
Right.
Paul is in London, and he says, hey, Paul, B-Lo, and whatever other guests you guys have for us, just a couple of questions. Who do you see as being the main kick and punt returners this year, or will each be run on a committee basis? That's a good question. You guys breaking down the specialists?
It's like Wes Welker for punts. I mean, sure hands.
He probably will see some duty as a punt returner.
I'm afraid to get him smashed any more than he does, though. You know?
Yeah, he always dives to the ground, though. He doesn't usually get hit like he did against Pittsburgh that one play.
If Matthew Slater can hold on to the ball, I think he's got some speed returning kicks. I think that'd be interesting to see.
A guy to keep in mind is Darius Butler. I think he's a dynamic athlete, did some of that in college. I think he'll get some opportunities. I know that Bill doesn't necessarily like to just hand things over to a rookie sight unseen, but I think if he can show that he can do it in training camp, I think you might see him get some reps. And the regular guy, Terrence Wheatley, another guy.
I think Wheatley will hype. You'll see catching punts during training camp.
I haven't seen Will hype do much
Kevin
of that,
Falk.
But Wheatley has done it. Falk will be back on both.
Yeah. Right.
He's usually the safe punt return guy because he has the best hands.
That's
but
right.
That's going to be an interesting competition because they don't have the Ellis Hobbs that you knew was going to do it.
Or Bethel Johnson.
So we'll see how it goes with that. Are there any players that you would love to see make the roster that are not close to being locks? For me, I have 5 that after rewatching games last year, I'd like to see in the 53. Tyson DeVree, Matthew Slater, Antoine Spann, Lee Kevin-Smith, and Mark Lavoie. The first 4 all showed something on special teams as well as contributing in the fourth quarter in games like the Arizona one. Lavoie also looked like a very capable backup before Kazier came in, which is another reason it surprised me that Vollmer was drafted. Looking forward to playing fantasy football, PFW fantasy football again this year. Out of those guys, I don't think DeVree has a chance. Just too much depth at tight end. With Chris Baker, Alex Smith, David Thomas, and Benjamin Watson. I just think that's too many.
Yeah, no, I agree. There.
Too many guys.
Hasn't Spann seen some time on the secondary?
Spann has seen some time. He's got a shot to stick around as an extra. I think that his odds are very long. However, Slater's going to have his work cut out for him. He's strictly a special teams guy. Lee Kevin Smith, I think, has a very good chance of sticking around. He's been a decent backup for them. And Lavor has also got a good chance of sticking around. He was more than a backup last year. He started games at tackle as well. So it's hard to know. They definitely have Paul is right. They've drafted a lot of linemen. So both of those guys are going to have added competition with some young guys this year. But most of the defensive linemen, except for Brace, were late round picks. So Myron Pryor, Darryl Richard. I'm not sure that those guys are locks to enter into the equation. Lee Kevin Smith certainly. If with another strong camp can beat those guys out. I don't know. Any other? Ray Ventrone is the guy that I'd like to see him stick around.
I think Ventrone's valuable. Wide receiver, DB, special teams.
Just think he's a terrific special teams guy. And
absolutely.
You got to have those.
I agree there. I think in terms of draft picks, I'd like to see Edelman make the team. I mean, I don't know where his exact position is, whether it's at kind of like a slot receiver, like a gadget guy, kind of a return man crossover type thing. But, I just think someone with that kind of athleticism and, they spent a draft pick on him, so they definitely have something in mind for him. But I'd like to see him make the team.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. I don't have really any feeling at all about him. I haven't seen him play yet. So, like Ventrone, I like when I watch him play. Now, if you'd asked me, when Ventrone was a rookie, I would have been like,
you have no idea.
I don't care. But I've seen the guy play now, and I root for him. Yeah, I definitely root for him, but I'm not sure about. It's hard to tell because there's so many guys that I think are locks, because this roster is so deep and talented. It's hard to really find guys like that. Wow, Walter is another preseason coverage guy. He says last year you guys promised to look into doing play-by-play for the preseason. I don't think people are necessarily looking for strict play-by-play. They just want a running dialogue during a game. I'm going to bring it up to Fred when he gets back, if he ever gets back. And we'll go from there, and we'll see if it's a possibility. I'm not sure it's possible, but if we can, contractually as well as, talent's not a question, but physically in terms of our capabilities of being able to put something on the net during a game, I don't know what kind of stipulations, because, we do have a
There's something already.
Patriots Network, WBZ, is they pay money to be, involved in that sort of stuff. So we'll have to check that out. But we're going to hit back to the phones, guys, and hit Mike in Puerto Rico. Mike?
Hey, how you doing?
Thank you very much for a wonderful lunch.
Oh, much. Don't worry about it. I think I still owe you guys for all the entertainment you provided over the last couple of months.
Yes, that's true. You absolutely do.
Hey. I just found out that you were flying solo. How's everything going? How's the ship holding up?
We're going fine. I brought the interns down with me. So it's not it's not a true solo flight, but the buffoons are not here. Eric, Andy, and Fred, only to be replaced by other buffoons.
Right?
Yeah, no, everybody's on vacation, except for me.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. they're quitters.
I'm on vacation next week.
Oh, okay. Well, I hope you're going down to Virginia again?
No.
Oh, okay.
No,
all
just
right.
Just hanging around here. Probably a couple of trips, if you must know. Maybe a trip to Canobie Lake.
Mm. He's going to go to the hall.
He's going to go to the hall.
That's awesome. Sorry I couldn't call earlier. I was having some meeting with some customers and didn't get a chance to call. But I wanted to see, that thing that how what you listen to becomes part of your everyday attitude and the way you talk to people. I was actually talking. I had an Andy Hart moment. I was talking with my sales manager down here in Puerto Rico. She's a female, right? And we were talking about lunch and about trying new things every day, so on and so forth. And she goes like, "Well, I'll try anything at least once." And then I had an Andy Hart moment, and I went back to her. Yeah, and you got the scars to show for it.
Oh,
classic!
Man. Did you get fired?
And I just could not believe that I said that out loud to a female sales manager.
Classless.
What did she say?
No, she laughed hysterically. I mean, we have that type of, banter going up in the office every once in a while, but I usually don't answer like that. But she just, you know, put up a big target on the back of her, on her back. So
hey, it's almost like she was asking for it, right? I mean, what are you going to do?
Yeah. No, but it was cool. And I just wanted to say thanks for all the good entertainment, all the good Patriot talk, and hope to talk to you guys soon, okay? Say hi to everybody
Mike,
for
thank you again for the lunch, and I wanted to specifically send thanks from Chris Ferreira, who thought it was very nice of you to include him. So he wanted me to give you a special shout-out, so I'll do it in person.
All right, that's cool, man. Well, hi to the interns. I'll talk to you guys soon, and go Patriots.
All right, Mike, thanks for the call. More podcasting in the preseason. I love it. I'm going to definitely have to look into this with Fred, see if there's any way we can do this. John is in South Carolina. He misses almost all the preseason games, even with the NFL package. I would love to be able to listen to you guys do a podcast of the preseason games. Of course, you should be compensated justly for your hard work. Yeah, that ain't happening. I would pay for the webcast within reason just to be able to hear what the young guys are doing in the game. You could even include it in the cost of the paper. It would be great to see if any of our prospects are succeeding when I cannot watch the game. Then again, I am a little nutty. But that's the audience, though. The preseason, people that are sitting down to watch preseason football games, by definition, are a little nutty.
Right.
I mean, that's guys like me. That's what I would. That's what I used to do. So I think that's a little bit beyond the casual fan. Do you guys watch preseason games?
Yeah, I do. And I have season tickets, and a lot of times like I go because, I mean, nobody else wants to really go to a preseason game. But you're not going to see, like, the first drive and see Randy Moss, you know, catch a five-yard hitch. It's people that want, you know, to know who's going to make the team and who we need, like what positions we need to fill. And, I mean, you guys can give a more detailed kind of analysis on that than the general broadcasting, I think. Yeah, it's definitely a kind of a...
You, Craig?
Yeah,
kind of thoughts?
Yeah, I watch. And, I mean, I think strictly football is football. And if you enjoy it that much, you should watch it. And if you want to see potential prospects, you should watch it. It won't give you the insight of, you know, all the players starting, but if you are a nut and love it that much, then there's no reason to think who you might see later on in the season by watching preseason games.
TG is another one who wants to chime in on this. He says we don't necessarily have to do play-by-play per se, more like a game with PFW commentary. I think that's what we would do. We wouldn't sit there and say, you know, third and seven, Welker in the slot to the right. We wouldn't do that. You know how Florio does a live blog with commentary during Monday Night Football? of course, a live podcast would be best. So if it's kind of like the game with greats, but in this case, it's the game with the goofballs. Tell Fred it's what the people want. We can't tell him that, TJ, because that just eliminates the possibility of him doing it. Because Fred thinks, even though he makes fun of me for hating all of you guys, Fred thinks he just flat out knows more than all of you guys, and you guys don't know what you want. And if I heard him say things like that once, I've heard him say it 1,000 times. Doc, you got to back me up. They don't know. They don't know from Flash, right? They don't know from Real Player.
They don't know what
whatever.
They want until they have it.
Right.
Then they don't want it.
Then they don't want it. They don't even know what they want. And then before long, you got an ice cream headache.
They do want the blitz. They want the Patriots.com news.
Perfect example right there. Yeah. What else do we have here?
I think you guys are running into some trouble, though, doing the live. Because there are people that... Oh, that was a sweet free kick.
We don't really talk about, especially that sport.
But you'd have to hit a lot of shift F5 to be able to get the preseason game.
Yeah.
This is true. Just keep hitting it. Shift F5. Let's see. Brian's in Baltimore. He wanted to talk about that dome team thing that we brought up a little while ago. Pats will run the ball this year. They have to. Just want to chime in this year and on the Pats this year and the conversation about how it appears they are built like a dome team. I would definitely say this year's squad has the potential to break records again in passing, but no way are they built like a dome team. Just because of Brady coming back and their reputation from 07, they are going to expect nonstop passing, but for this year at least, to start. I wouldn't be surprised at all if they run the ball 30-plus times a game. Plus, the need to ease in Brady to playing again could be a factor in running more to start. Also, as much fun as 07 was and how dominant they were to win a Super Bowl, how dominant they were. To win a Super Bowl, they have to be a balanced attack, especially against the tougher teams. I'm saying this mainly because when was the last time a team leading the league in rushing or passing has won a Super Bowl? I'm sure it's happened, but I can't think of one. I don't have those stats right in front of me, but
that's kind of what I was saying. I think a balanced offensive attack is.
I can't imagine the Rams didn't lead the league in passing when they won the Super Bowl.
Right. Yeah. I think last year was the Saints, or they were close to it, and they did not, obviously. But
they stunk.
Yeah, I don't think you can be a one-sided offense. I don't want to see Brady in shotgun 40 times.
So the Patriots couldn't have won the Super Bowl in 07, is what you're telling me, because they weren't a balanced offense?
No, they could, but like we said earlier, they adjusted as the season, you know, turned a little bit and weather got colder and they played tough defenses in the playoffs. I got frustrated.
You score points. I'm with Bill on this one. Bottom line is points scored, points allowed.
Right. I just
doesn't matter how you get there.
For me, it's frustrating as a fan to see second and two, second and one, and you're like, all right, there's a 95% chance we're going shotgun here. Oh, look, Brady's coming out in shotgun, four wides. Like,
and then what usually happens?
Usually,
instead of getting 3 yards in the first down, you get 15 in the first down.
Yeah, but usually it's successful. But then in the 19th game of the season, you got pass rushing ends that are two of the best that have played in a long time.
Listen,
and you can't
they played
stop
against
them.
That same team 4 weeks earlier and scored 38 points.
I don't want to see Brady in shotgun on
okay,
second
they had
and
a
one,
bad dude. Game. They played poorly and lost.
I understand.
What are you going to do?
I want a balanced offense.
Why?
If it's not
because we've already broken all the records. I want a balanced offense.
I don't care about breaking records. I care about winning games. I don't care if I have a balanced offense or unbalanced, whatever. Whatever it takes to win, whatever it takes to score. If they're balanced and they score 35 points a game, I'm fine with that. But I don't think you necessarily have to be balanced to score a lot of points and win a lot of games.
But you just said yourself, when is a team that – or that email has just said, like, when is a team that led the league in one of those categories won?
I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I'm sure that it's happened.
But it's hard to just be one-dimensional and be successful. And I'm not saying the Patriots will be or were one-dimensional in 2007. I'm just saying – I think you...
All right.
Don't get me going on this.
All right. Do you have something to add over there, Junior?
I got a little something to add. In terms of a balanced attack, if it does take, you know, 30 rushes a game, you know, between Sammy Morris and Lawrence Maroney and Fred Taylor, that if that's what it takes, you know, and to take away from the second and two, you know, with Brady, you know, throwing...
Well, I'm fine with that. Whatever it takes to score points and win games, I don't care.
If it's not broken, don't fix it.
Yeah, I don't care. I don't care what they do on offense, as long as they score points and move the ball.
It was broken. We did not win. We did not win.
They played poorly.
We didn't win.
They went 18-1,
Chris. We didn't win
last
year. We didn't win before.
You didn't win last year because your quarterback got hurt, not because you didn't have a balanced offense.
I know, but you can't say if it's not broken, don't fix it, because if you didn't win, it's probably broken. If you're expecting to win a championship.
Hey, Paul. According to USA
Today. I've had enough of this guy. What?
Of the teams that have led the league in rushing yards, two won Super Bowl championships.
How about passing?
I'm looking.
All right. I'm not surprised by that rushing thing, because you have to throw the football to win games.
Was one of those the 72 Dolphins? Because they...
Probably. Yeah. Jason is, I don't recognize Jason's email here. My question is in regards to special teams. Love special teams talk. Where do you think our special teams will rank within our division? I know the Bills usually have a top squad. We are usually competitive, but we lost a lot of key players, including Izzo. Do you think guys like Aiken, Red, and rookies like Chung and safety McGowan will rejuvenate our special teams and be able to belch in the middle of a reading.
Appropriate.
And be able to stop the explosive guys like Leon Washington, Roscoe Parrish, Teddy Ginn, and some of the more explosive guys in the game.
I think they're going to miss Kelly Washington, but...
I agree. I think Kelly Washington is a... I don't think it's a major loss, but he was a very good special team player who a guy like McGowan is going to have to be a similarly good special teams player. You still have guys like Ventrone and maybe Slater around. I think that they will be better. I think that it's going to be a little different. I think some of the schemes are different with Scott O'Brien coming in to coach, replacing Brad Seeley, who I think did a great job. This is not a a rock. This is not a Fred-like rocket shot at the guy who left, no longer being able to be competent enough to be a coach.
We don't talk about him.
But I think Scott O'Brien is going to bring some different things and some drills that we've already seen at practice during minicamp and stuff have been a little bit different. You got the answer to that passing one?
No, but isn't it Bill O'Brien?
No, that's the offensive coordinator.
Oh, sorry.
Well, de facto offensive coordinator.
I was still reading.
Yeah, yeah. Well, next time, just do what I tell you to do, and don't worry about correcting me and my illustrious thoughts as they're spewing forth. With 9 minutes to go, I almost made it here. Come on. Who is he sick of? Oh, Nicole. Nicole is sick of Lawrence Maroney. I'm sick of this guy.
I am as well.
He needs to start running and stop trying to break tackles. Run straight, not sideways. Time to say goodbye to this guy. 3 years is too much to wait for him to come through. If he doesn't have it by now, he never will.
This is Nicole.
It's always the toughest ones are our female listeners.
Is
this
Nicole?
The toughest ones, yes.
I completely agree. I have been one of the ones around the office, one of the only ones, who is willing to say that a Belichick first-round draft pick has been a bust. I am sick of Lawrence Maroney. Give the carries to Sammy Morris, Fred Taylor, Kevin Falk. Heck, Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis.
I knew it was coming.
Get Lawrence Maroney. I mean, he's not going to play past week six anyway. There's going to be some.
Did you know what's coming? Ben Jarvis?
Yeah, he loves him.
He loves him. Sammy Morris is my boy, though. Sammy Morris is my boy.
Okay, another to the great debate. This might be the last one today of the great debate. From TA.
Craig's good with this.
I see what you
Craig
did
likes
there.
This.
I've been listening to your arguments for the past few shows. I have to side with Andy Hart on this one. I think you guys are ignoring the fact that Brady was a great playoff quarterback, one of the best of all time. He made plays when the team needed him the most. We don't know for a fact that the quarterback that succeeds Brady would have been as good in the playoffs as Brady was. Look at Peyton Manning. He is a great regular season quarterback, but always falls short and doesn't play up to his standards in the playoffs. What do you think of that? Craig hates this argument?
Craig.
Oh, no.
Craig hates talking, I think, for the most part.
I'm just a big fan of the 19-0.
I think when you say that, like, I'm going to tell you right now, the next quarterback who plays for this team is not going to be Tom Brady in terms of playoff heroics and stuff like that. But
I agree.
I mean, just you're also leaving out the possibility that the next quarterback is
you can't
is,
shut the door on him completely.
Right. I mean, Eli Manning was about to lose his job before he ran the table and won the Super Bowl. I mean, like he wasn't deemed a clutch quarterback, but you know, there's what they call, I hate this term, but game managers who have won Super Bowls. Trent Dilfer, like, I mean, you can't just assume that you go from having Tom Brady, who's a legend.
I hate that people think of that as a negative term.
Managing the game?
Yeah.
I think
Tom Brady is the best game manager I've ever seen.
He's also the best playmaker at that position in the league. You have to make plays to be quarterback.
Yeah.
Not manage games.
I see. This could be another whole show, and Andy and I are promising to have a good argument about this. At some point. Well, an argument.
Is he on my side for a change?
I can't promise. Well, he thinks it's a negative.
Yeah. I think it's a negative, too.
I don't. I think managing the game is making throws to get first downs and not turning the ball over and throwing the ball away when the situation calls for it and punting. And that's managing the game. That's being smart. Instead of 14. Saying, it's third and eight, I got to throw the ball. And maybe, you know, instead of punting, you end up turning it over at midfield and putting your defense in a bad position. You might make plays doing that sometimes. You might be able to make plays and turn something into, make something out of nothing occasionally. But the other times are going to be you're putting your defense in bad spots and you're going to lose games.
I think when you're a game manager, you're basically being called somebody who can't turn a third and 12 into a first down.
I don't think of it.
That's why you don't call Peyton Manning or Tom Brady. You said you think he's a great game manager.
I think he's the best game manager I've ever seen.
He doesn't turn the ball over.
Maybe Montana.
But like guys like Roethlisberger, Manning, like these guys make plays.
You think Brady and Manning do the things that Roethlisberger does?
No, I think
in terms of making those kinds of plays.
No,
I think everyone's
mobile.
You could count on one hand the amount of times Manning or Brady has done what Roethlisberger did 10 times in the playoffs last year. But at the same time, Roethlisberger occasionally puts himself and his team in danger with those plays. I don't think he's a great game manager.
But he's a playmaker. That's why he's won. That's why he's won Super Bowls. He makes plays.
And there are other guys who have won Super Bowls by being good
right.
game managers.
That's what
There's different ways to win Super
you're
Bowls.
Just, you're,
why? I don't know why you think you have to have a balanced offense to win or why you think you have to be a playmaker to win. There are a lot of different ways to win.
I just said in response to the email, just because you don't have Tom Brady doesn't mean you can't have a, quote, game manager that can win for you. They can win. I just don't like to call someone a game. I don't think it's...
Well, you think that's a philosophical difference, and Andy agrees with you. You think that's a negative. I don't. I think that's a compliment.
I think if your quarterback is called a game manager...
I think
manager,
the quarterback's job is to...
Manage the game.
Manage the game.
I think
know the clock, know the situation, move the chains, score points.
I think if
that's managing the game.
If your quarterback's a game manager, you got to have a 1,700-yard back in the backfield. I think that's what that means.
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. And if it and if that's the way you are asked to manage the game is by
relying.
I mean, Ben Roethlisberger was a great game manager the first time he won the Super Bowl.
Right.
And he won it in a totally different way the second time.
You can win with someone who's not like Brady. You can win with
I'm just saying,
not game
saying,
manager.
He's not saying
I'm not
can't.
Saying you can't. I'm saying I don't understand why it's why is it negative? I don't really get that.
Because that's not a guy who's gonna, you know, when you need
Trent
someone
Dilfer wasn't a great game manager, in my opinion. Trent Dilfer was a stiff. He couldn't make any plays for you, nothing. He couldn't convert third and three, never mind third and 12.
All right, this isn't going
That
anywhere.
Was, let's not turn the ball over and let's just punt and hope our defense scores points. That team went 5 consecutive weeks in the middle of the year without scoring an offensive touchdown and went 3-2. That's not being a game
manager.
Because
they had a game manager, not a playmaker.
No, that's not being a game manager. He didn't do anything.
But how can it be a bad thing? Managing the game.
I agree. I don't know how it can be a bad thing.
Managing the game is a polite term for you can't win the game for your team. But
And see, Todd's going to actually, he thinks he's going to be taking a shot at me, but he is actually making my point for me.
You're making my point.
He says, the biggest Drew Bledsoe fan thinks that game manager is a positive. Bledsoe always forced balls on third down. That's my point. That's why Drew wasn't a good game manager.
You were horrible.
But I agree with you, Paul. Being a game manager is Brady's biggest strength. But that's why I would say that Drew Bledsoe struggled. He made plays. Drew Bledsoe was a playmaker extraordinaire. But at the same time, he also made bad plays at bad times. That's not being a good game manager. When you always – Brett Favre, he's always making plays for both teams. More so the other way now than he did earlier in his career. But he was always a mistake-prone guy.
I just got a text from an outside listener saying, stop battling your boss. So I'm not. I'm going to stop
arguing. I'm not your boss. Otherwise, you would not be employed.
I wouldn't have a job.
All right, what else we got? We got any other housekeeping items over there, Doc, since you failed miserably in looking up if any teams that led the league in passing have won the Super Bowl?
That's something I want to
know. Any more McNair?
The Rams must have.
You want to talk about McNair more?
No.
All right, so we got – I just wanted to rephrase here. I mean, reset before we sign off.
Recap.
Andy will be back on Thursday, so we'll have a regular show with our regular nonsense. We had no – ridiculous tangents today. That's a draw. That's my fault. I need to do a better job of setting up, you know, soap in a slot or some kind of invention that Fred has.
I can't wait.
We should have sporkled.
You should, Bill.
Sporkle.
Maybe we will. Maybe we'll sporkle upstairs, and that'll give us a tangent for next week.
All right.
But we got nothing. We got nothing in terms of ridiculous off-topic.
We got nothing stupid accomplished. Is basically.
No, and I'm a little disappointed about that.
I agree.
That's the best part of the show to me is when we stray. So Andy will be back on Thursday. I'm sure that he'll have some nonsense to put forth. And, again, I wanted to thank Brian Lowe for stopping by for the first hour. And make sure you keep an eye out for the Fantasy Lowdown podcast, which is going to be early August sometime, kind of giving a little primer for the fantasy football season. I want to thank Ding and Dong, otherwise known as Chris and Craig, my interns,
for
not my interns, but our interns. Who have a very warped sense. Well, Chris, anyway, has a very warped sense of football. Craig is smart. He agrees with me.
I'm provocative.
Doc, what else? We got anything?
That's it.
All right, that's it. So until next time, we'll see you noon Thursday. Into
the future. Old, no hair, fine. But Paul's getting sick of these fat jokes.
I'm not fat. I have a different life choice.
Patriots.com Radio.